Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thanks, Triathlon, for making all of our mornings so pleasant.
I had no problem getting in.
Well, you got in at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Well, about 4 o'clock this morning. But
Nobody's triathloning at 1 o'clock in the morning.
No, they're not.
All of the rest of us normal people. And what's this private service that you're giving Andy of giving him, like, specific directions on how to... Andy said, oh, yeah, Schwani gave me directions on...
I didn't give him directions.
He just alerted me to the fact that the drive was
the drive was closed.
What is the alert? What does that mean? He gave me an alert.
Texted me.
Hmm. Yeah. So, Producer Jack, did you get a text from Schwani?
No, I didn't. No. It was a surprise.
Neither did I.
Okay, I can see where this is going this morning. Well,
thanks, Schwani.
You're quite welcome.
I guess I could have been listening also.
But. Yeah, me too.
Why would you do that? Come on.
I was listening to my meditation tapes.
You have an incense burning in the car when you're driving.
Patchouli.
In.
I'd like to burn patchouli in the car.
You'd like what?
I like to.
You'd like to what?
I like to burn patchouli in the car.
Oh.
Do you know what that is?
No.
Patchouli is like an old school hippie incense.
Oh, okay. I just never heard the term. You
patchouli?
Know, we just called it incense. That's all we called it. You have a black light in the car, too?
I do. And black light.
And a lava lamp, yeah.
Black light posters and a lava lamp.
And the posters.
Yeah, but don't try to get me off the subject here. I'd like to know why Jack and I... did not get personalized instructions from Schwani GPS, apparently.
Well, here's the deal. Sarah at the switchboard was able to make contact with Andy.
That's our first Andy Griffith reference.
And she just wasn't able to get Sunday
morning,
through.
If you've got your Sunday morning bingo cards, there would be your first.
Who had 909 in the pool?
And she just wasn't able to get through to you. I must apologize.
I had no problem.
She just got a new switchboard, you know?
You know, Jack, who is is like the sanest one of all of us that work here on the show. I come in and Jack's angry.
Yeah.
Producer Jack, he's never angry.
No, very even
keel. Angry?
Kind of takes the fun out of my job of making him angry during the show.
I think you're rubbing off on me.
When he goes, I couldn't be prouder. I could not be prouder.
Way to go, Jack.
He was mad when he came in. Did you see the traffic around the building this morning? I couldn't get in the building today.
Well, you must have gotten in somehow.
Well, I got
you're
in
sitting
my car.
In the other room.
I had to do something with my automobile.
Your automobile.
I couldn't get, you can't get anywhere near this building because they have to do the triathlon.
It's the duathlon.
I thought, well, now because they canceled.
It's the duathlon.
They canceled the swimming portion.
Use the correct terminology.
No. This was just a practice run for the marathon.
Oh, and then we have Bike the Drive.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's next week, right?
It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. We'd be spending a lot of time at Bradley
I'll
Place
make
this
sure,
fall.
I'll make sure to text you for next week. In fact, I'll do it this morning.
I've already blocked you. It's all right.
Sad about Bob Barker.
Passed away yesterday. But how about that? 99 years old. That's a life, man. That's a life well lived, I think. Longtime host of The Price is Right. My constant companion for every sick day I ever had when I was in school.
Me too, yeah.
Right? The only time you get to watch him. Now, Schwani, you're old.
Oh, right. Thank you so much.
Do you remember him on Truth or Consequences?
Yes, I do. And I also remember, I think it was Bill Cullen who was on Price is Right before he was on as the host. Bill Cullen was one of those legendary early... television game show pioneers.
Host, sure.
Yeah.
Crew cut glasses.
Yeah. 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 Bill Cullen.
Yeah, he was a long time daytime host. He was another one who was was, you know, kept you company when you were home, homesick.
That's very true. And Johnny Olson was the high-pitched, excited off-camera announcer for all those shows.
Come on down.
Come on down.
You're the next contestant on The Price is Right.
People would run down. What a concept for a game show. Guess how much stuff costs.
Yep.
We need to come up with closest, some kind of scam like that.
The closest person wins. Did you ever have any desire to be on a game show as a contestant?
No.
Other than the grand prize game on Bozo?
Yeah. Yeah, that's not really a game show, though.
I know.
That's a competition.
But that was just a game, a competition.
That's a sports competition.
Athletic endeavor.
Yes.
Grand prize game.
Yes.
No, not really.
You didn't?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I like The Price is Right. I was always a little baffled by the concept of the show. Guess how much stuff costs.
Yeah.
That confused you?
That didn't confuse me. It just seemed so simple.
Well, that...
And you had to act, you know, crazy in, mm-hmm. in order to get chosen. Like, you know, most of the game shows, they do audition people and observe people when they come in. And whoever is acting the craziest...
The ones that get picked.
They're the ones that get picked.
Right? Yeah.
The thing that used to baffle me about The Price is Right is when you'd win, you'd come up on stage. And there were some people that had to play this game that was so intricate and, you know, the Golden Road or whatever that was. You have to sit there and it seemed like it was an hour. Then there's one that comes up, pick the highest price, and boom, you're out.
Right. Yeah. You take the, you know, was it Jay? Was that the guy, or am I thinking of a different show where they would bring stuff out on a little table and you have to guess? I think I'm thinking of Let's Make a Deal.
Let's Make a Deal, yeah.
That's Let's Make a Deal.
Yeah. That was Monty Hall, I think.
That was Monty Hall. Yeah. And Jay Stewart was the guy that I was thinking of, the announcer.
Oh, that's right.
He would come down the aisle and here's a, you know, a wheelbarrow. But anyway, back to Bob Barker.
Yeah.
1956 to 1974 on Truth or Consequences, which was a pretty funny show. People had to do crazy things in order to win cash and prizes. That was a fun show. And then he moved over to The Price is Right, where he stayed until his retirement at the age of 83. And he was a master.
Oh, yeah.
He was an absolute master. He retired in 2007. He won 14 Daytime Emmy Awards. And, Schwani, what's he best known for?
Bob Barker?
Yeah.
Hosting The Price is Right?
No.
And
Animal Rights.
Yep.
Oh, the Animal Rights. Yes, he always said to have your pet spayed or neutered at the end. Yeah. Yes.
Which is why when Schwani came on the show, we had to have him spayed or neutered. Anyone who's been on this show, honestly, that's why the producers don't last very long. That's an exception for Jack to be on the show this long. Most of them, when we bring up the spay or neutering thing, they want to get moved to David Hochberg's show immediately. But that's what Bob Barker is. He is known equally for his animal rights, advocacy for animal rights, as being a legendary figure on daytime TV.
And for his fight scene with Happy Gilmore.
That is one of the greatest scenes that's ever been put on film.
I think you've had enough.
We're going to show that tomorrow morning at our little special WGN TV morning show tribute tomorrow.
That's awesome.
We're going to show that. And some of the contestants, I have always been quite amused by when people, you know, when they get to come on down and they play the game and they win and they, you know, they come on the stage and they win again, they go nuts. And Bob Barker frequently ran away from the contestants.
He got attacked a couple times.
He got attacked a couple of times by people.
I think he was, some woman came up and gave him a giant hug. Oh, he almost fell over.
That was fantastic. That was fantastic.
But that was one of the first game shows that I can remember that was an hour long, because it used to be a half hour.
Right.
And then they changed it, but they put the wheel in there, and then for the showcase showdown.
Well, he was, that's not easy to be a game show host. And, you know, you're dealing with things that are happening that are completely unplanned, unscripted. So, you know, you have to be pretty quick on your feet and, you know, smooth. And Bob Barker was all of those things. So I have a great deal of admiration for his professionalism through the years. And rest in peace. 99 years old. Holy smokes. That's all I have to say about it. Thought I had something else.
But I was also, you had mentioned Truth or Consequences. You know there's a Truth or Consequences, New Mexico town.
Is that today's far-flung
forecast? No, it's not, but it was one of the very first ones we did.
Oh. You act like I pay attention.
Yeah, right. No. I know you don't. But others do.
I hang on your every word. What do you mean?
But Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, in the southern part of the state, actually took its name to get some notoriety from the show. It was a radio show at the time, and then changed its name from Hot Springs because of the contest to name the show.
Hmm.
And so it became Truth or Consequences. And another pioneering person who did game shows and talk shows, Ralph Edwards.
Oh,
remember
was,
Ralph Edwards was, and This Is Your Life?
Ralph Edwards was the one who hired Bob Barker.
Okay.
To be on The Price is Right.
Price is Right.
First it was called The New Price is Right. And then they changed it to Price is Right, I guess, from when Bill Cullen, as you're saying, if he was the first host. But it was Ralph Edwards who was behind a lot of these old game shows and hosted his own show, This Is Your Life.
This Is Your Life, yeah. Yep.
Yep. So, yeah, that's we're going to talk game shows later on in honor of Bob Barker. And just for some fun, all these game shows that we grew up with. I think Match Game was my favorite.
Oh, Match Game was awesome.
Who was the host?
Gene Rayburn.
Yeah, but I loved that the celebrities would get drunk.
Oh, my God.
Remember Hollywood Squares?
Hollywood Squares, they would have a few cocktails before they went on the
Sometimes
air.
I think they might have, yes.
Yeah. Oh, I think that was part of the key to the success of those shows, that clearly you never knew what those celebrities were going to say and do. Hilarious. Anyway, we'll talk more game shows later on. In honor of Bob Barker, should we have a round of Price is Right here this morning?
I think we should, yes.
Yeah, let's have a little, because really it's just guessing the price of stuff. In our WGN vending machine right down the hall, you can buy a Snickers bar. Snickers. Delicious chocolate with nougat and nuts. Our contestants, Dave Schwann, come on down. Andy Mazur, come on down. So what do you think the cost of this Snickers bar is?
Schwann, you go first.
$2.
Can't go over a dollar. What do
you can't go over a dollar?
No, you can't go over.
You can't go over the price.
Oh, the price. Yeah. The actual retail price. Okay. $1.50.
$1.50.
$1.51.
Andy, you would be the winner. Yes. It's a bargain price at $1.75.
Yes.
Jack, tell them what they've won.
I don't know. I don't have the sheet.
Lucky
get bragging
you,
rights.
Lucky for you, we have some leftover Seymour Paisin scarves from 1974 back in the prize closet.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm spent after that.
Did a lot
you
of
don't
research.
Have another one?
No.
Okay.
Honestly, that's the only thing. I've never even bought. I think it's $1.75.
Yeah.
I think that's what the price is.
You know, the other thing that was interesting and cool to watch about the prices, right, is how expensive the cars got.
Right.
Because every once in a while, you know, you'd have to guess all four numbers, and then they would start giving you the first number because it was in the tens of thousands now.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
Our vending machine is a ripoff, by the way. I think if you were to actually go buy a Snickers bar, it might be, what would it be like at a store? A buck? Something like that?
No, it's more than that now.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I got a couple of them. It was like two for $4. You know, so $1.99 plus tax or something like that.
The Walgreens, it's I'm going to use Walgreens as my base.
That was where I got them.
Because everything else is pretty hiked up, but not like our vending machines. And if you use a credit card in the vending machine.
There's a fee.
There's a fee for that also.
Mm-hmm.
I had actually fill out forms like I was applying for a mortgage in order to get something out of there a couple of weeks ago.
According to Walgreens.com, your Snickers bar, 1.86 ounce Snickers bar.
Yes.
Is on sale right now for 99 cents.
Oh.
But it used to be two for $3 or one for $1.99.
Well, you still would have won, Andy.
I think I would have won.
No. And still no prize.
Correct.
That's the bigger issue.
I went in with little expectation.
We'll find out what's behind that curtain on today's fear. What's it called? The Fearless Forecast?
Far-flung forecast.
You know, those were not the F words coming to my mind.
No, I didn't think so.
And potentially award-winning Far-flung Forecast.
Glad to see you got the title right this time.
Completely blanked on it. I was too overcome with grief about Bob Barker. This is our weekly compendium of facts and figures, and all presented by Dave Schwann. Come on down.
Well, friends, get out your compasses and protractors and newfangled GPS devices, because today we go to Crescent City, Florida. Crescent City, Florida has a population of 1,654, and it is located on two lakes. Crescent Lake lies to the east of town, thus the term Crescent City, and also Lake Stella is located to the west.
But Stella!
We bring up Crescent City because it is the hometown of a gentleman named A. Philip Randolph. Does this name do anything to you?
A. Philip Randolph. Does not.
Well, he was among the people who was behind the March on Washington in 1963. He and Bayard Rustin and, of course, Martin Luther King Jr. participated 60 years ago this weekend. Wonderful to see the commemorations and observances this weekend at the Lincoln Memorial. A. Philip Randolph was not only involved with that, he had the idea for this march as far back as 1941. And it took 20-some years for it to come to fruition. He also was involved in forming the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters, the porters from the Pullman District in 1925. So Crescent City, Florida, his hometown, sunny today. It's 84 there. It's going up to 91.
Our weekly visit with Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital. Good morning to you, Dr. Most, and welcome. Nice to have you with us. Did you have a good week out with your golf buddies?
Yes, I did, Dean. It was a fun week, so we really enjoyed it, and get to see some guys once or twice a year, and it's a good opportunity to catch up. So it was a good week.
Yeah, I hope you had some air-conditioned tents and things to enjoy those reunions. You had yourself a hot week last week.
Yeah, Saturday and Sunday were really hot, and fortunately, you know, like I said earlier, you know, it's the players are one thing. They're used to this. They can walk 6 miles in these 90-degree, but you got to think about the caddies, some of who are older, carrying a 45-pound bag, walking 7 miles.
Yeah.
Those are the ones I get concerned about.
Yeah, well, I'm glad it all worked out okay and without incident. I just want to get a quick update on where we are with this new variant of COVID that we've talked about the past few weeks. I've had more people this week ask me about vaccines, that you know, where they are with vaccines and what they should be doing and what's the status of this new vaccine that you'd mentioned is going to be coming out in September, which now is less than a week away.
Yeah, so if you were watching the news this week, you did see about another new variant. And, you know, it's nice that we're keeping people informed, but I don't want them to be overly concerned and worried. It's just that we have a much closer eye on how we're looking at these. So you probably have all heard about the BA 2.86. And we were like, okay, that's the newest variant. You have to remember, there's only been 10 identified cases worldwide. So this is nothing to get overly concerned about. The XBB strain is still the predominant strain here, and that's what the vaccine is going to be designed to attack here in just a couple weeks, expected to be released in mid-September.
All right. So folks that are, I mean, we'll open up the phone lines for questions, but, you know, maybe we can answer many of those questions now. People, if people are due for vaccines, they probably should wait until this new vaccine is available, so they would be the most up to date, right?
Correct. Yeah. You know, the booster that we released almost about a year ago right now, you know, we kept it to one. And then in the spring, after the UK and Canada said, hey, we need a second booster because we know these vaccines, they wane a little bit. So they okayed it for a second. So many people, if you haven't gotten a second booster, you're technically up for one. You could get one. But being this close to the fall booster, I would say hold off on that one. That vaccine is not even going to be made anymore. And the XBB vaccine, the booster vaccine that'll be available in September here, is going to be the one that you're going to want to get. So certainly anybody who's on the fence right now, here we are. It's going to be the first, you know, we're going into Labor Day weekend. It's really just 2 weeks away, and you'll be able to get the appropriate vaccine that's the most up-to-date.
I wanted to also ask you about this new test, which is available for consumers for Alzheimer's. I believe that this is the first time such a thing is being made available for consumers to use, right?
It is. This is really interesting. And I don't want to say controversial, but we all have to be a little bit careful with it. You know, normally when you go to a doctor's office, he's going to say, okay, this is the test I want you to have. I want to check your hemoglobin A1C for diabetes. I want to check your cholesterol. But this is a test that you're going to be able to get and just go online, essentially, and get it, you know, by yourself without a doctor's order. So you would go online, and then they would tell you the draw station that you would go to. They would draw your blood. They would run the test. And then the results would be shared with you. So it's this, you know, direct-to-consumer testing that we're going to start to see more and more of. Think about even with COVID testing, how we were testing COVID at home before we used to have to go to hospitals or doctor's offices. So it's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out. And if it allows us to identify people with Alzheimer's a little bit earlier, and now that we have some treatments for it or treatment options, can we slow the progression of this disease and identify more people who have the illness earlier so that we have more treatment options?
Who are the people that should be concerned about this and possibly getting tested? If you've had a family history of Alzheimer's, should you be in line for that? We talked about this before. We're all forgetting things a little more, especially as we get older. We forget things. I mean, if you feel like you're overly forgetful, should you be doing this? Who are the people? What are signs that you should be tested for this?
Yeah. So if you have mild cognitive deficits or history of Alzheimer's, certainly in the family would be a good idea. I mean, and again, the test is not ideal. We're still finding out more about the test. But anybody who is concerned to a point of saying, you know what, dad is starting to slow down and he's starting to forget things and he didn't remember how to get to a certain, those are the individuals that say, hey, you know what, let's get this blood test done. And now at least you have one data point that you can go back to the doctor with and say, hey, here's what's going on right now. Here's his symptoms and here's the results of his blood test. So I look at it and say, you know, we're going to have false positives, false negatives. Certainly, it's the first time this test has been made. But anywhere we can increase the awareness of it and consider that we're going to have a blood test that may identify patients earlier, knowing that we have these drugs in the pipeline that could slow the progression of the illness, that's going to be the home run there. Early identification, early treatment, slow the progression.
Yeah, well, that was going to be my next question. So, you do find out that may have Alzheimer's, but there is no cure for it. There's nothing, but we have made some inroads, haven't we, of early treatment in the last 6 or 8 months?
Yeah, actually, just in the last, 3 months. I mean, it was just probably maybe a month ago we talked about Leqembi, you know, this drug that when given early on in the illness has shown to slow the progression of the illness by of blocking this beta amyloid. And that's what the blood test is looking at. The blood test is saying, well, what's the marker? The marker for Alzheimer's is beta amyloid. So they're looking for beta amyloid in a ratio against other proteins in your body for this blood test. So like you said, though, if we can find individuals who have early onset Alzheimer's and get them on this medication, we're extending the quality of their life and potentially the quantity of their life, but certainly the quality of their life.
Also, there are new tools available to identify Parkinson's disease much sooner than had been the previous protocol with this. Something that's called oculomics. Am I saying that right? Oculomics?
Yep. Yep. So it's interesting when we talk about the eye, and we often say it's a window to the body. It's the one opportunity a doctor can look into essentially what's going on in the vascular system and the nervous system in your body. Because when they take that little flashlight and they get really up close to your eyes, or when you have that what they call slit lamp exam at the doctor's office, we're looking at the back of your eye and we're looking for changes that show diabetes, that show macular degeneration, that show retinal issues. But what they're finding now is they did a big study where they looked at people who had Parkinson's and people who did not have Parkinson's and compared the OCT, the optical coherence tomography, so kind of like it's a scan, and they found indicators going, whoa, wait a second. We see these indicators only in Parkinson's patients, not in non-Parkinson's patients. So when you have something like that, and they were identifying, as they looked back at the data using artificial intelligence, they looked back 7 years before people had symptoms to say, you know what, they had the changes in the back of their eye that we noticed that had we known before, we could have predicted that within 5 to 7 years they're going to have Parkinson's, which again is going to give us that early acknowledgement of it, allow people to change their lifestyle, allow them to get on medications, allow them to really start to plan on things. You know, so a couple major illnesses where we really don't have a lot to work with, anything we can do to identify them earlier is going to allow for more treatment options and really extension of quality of life.
Yeah, that's the issue, with all of these things. You get tested, but then what? You know, you find out that you do have this or that. And then what happens? Slowing the progression of the disease down. And in the case of Parkinson's, is that where we are with this right now?
Yeah, Parkinson's is a difficult one because some of the medications we use for Parkinson's, people build up a tolerance for them to a point where they don't work. We have other things for Parkinson's where we put little neurotransmitters in their brain and just give them little shocks into their brain that take away their tremors. But certainly, I think probably the big thing here is if we identify early, then we can now start to watch the progression using this test, which could be done every year or 2 years, and really start to say, if we tried this drug, does it slow the progression? Because what we've had in the past, we've waited till people have had symptoms, and now we say, now we're going to try to take your symptoms away, whether it's the tremor of Parkinson's or whether it's the cognitive deficit of dementia. If we know early, then we can slow any of the progression based on identifying somebody who is going to end up with this disease years down the road. Boy, that's where we're really going to make an impact.
Now, with both of these tests for the Alzheimer's and the Parkinson's, if you go to your physician and say, I heard them talking on the radio about this or that, are these testing protocols readily available? And are insurance companies accepting responsibility to pay for it?
Yeah. So for the Parkinson's test, which is done by an ophthalmologist, it's anywhere from $60 to $125. Some insurances pay, some don't. But it is at the great clinics. We're very fortunate in the western suburbs to have Wheaton Eye Clinic, a large ophthalmology clinic, and they do this test on a regular basis. As far as the test for Alzheimer's, it's interesting. You can go online right now and put in your zip code, and it will tell you where to go to get your blood drawn to get the test done. It's being done by a company called Quest Diagnostics. So if you Google Quest Diagnostics Alzheimer's blood test. You will they'll pop up and say, enter your zip code. Enter your zip code. It'll say, here's where you can go. Those are out of pocket. That test hasn't been 100% proven to be as accurate as they would want it to. So you're not seeing insurance companies pay for that right now. In the future, again, as they build more data, you'll probably see them start to approve that test as well.
Let's get some calls for Dr. Kevin Most after a quick break. 312-981-7200-950. Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN, with Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital, and Frida on the phone line at 312-981-7200. Frida, you're on WGN.
Oh, thank you, Dean. Dr. Most, I have an 87-year-old brother who has a history of anxiety and panic attacks, and he's now been living in a nursing home, and I'm finding that during the late afternoon and evening, he's even more confused. He's clearer in the mornings. What is sundowner syndrome, and is there medication to slow up the process?
I was just going to say, as you're saying that, I'm like, oh, he's sundowning. He has sundowner syndrome. And that's the unfortunate thing, because the ability to kind of keep your circadian rhythm for sunlight and sunset and when we fall asleep and when we kind of get towards being groggy at the right time. But what really we see is that in these individuals, it becomes earlier in the day, and they get mood swings. Like you said, they get anxiety, they get energy surge, they can get confusion. So they kind of will get up and pace and rock. And we don't really know why, what the triggers are. For many of them, we think it's because the lights are dimmer, so sometimes keeping those lights a little bit brighter, and sometimes it's really going to try to minimize the triggers that cause that. So if you normally do X, Y, and Z, and you take that away, they're going to sundown for many reasons. So nutritional, there are some things, but you really want to maintain their normal standards and their structured activities so that they don't get stressed. And that's what usually happens. And then also simplifying their surroundings and their, you know, what's around them. You'd want to minimize the confusion that they may have. So it's a very difficult thing, and sometimes, unfortunately, we go to, well, let's just give medication because that's the easy way, when, in fact, changing the environment, getting them into a validating and distracting place where you will go and say, okay, let's go do this activity, where versus it's like, here, Kevin, take this medicine, and it'll get better. So it's a very difficult thing. It's very common in people in the hospital after a couple days in the hospital, and they're in a different environment. But unfortunately, there's not a lot of things that we can do. We try music therapy. We try, again, distractions, trying to keep them active. But it's a very difficult thing, especially in nursing homes, where sometimes the staffing is not as robust as it is in the hospital.
Yeah. Frida, good luck with all of that. Thank you for the call. Nick, you're next on WGN. Hello.
Yeah, thank you. You have a great show always.
Thank you.
I want to ask the doctor, with the coronavirus medicines that they came out with, usually there's a few years of trial periods, like 7, 8, 9 years, to see with more and more people that they test on to see how it's working out and see what adverse effects are out there. this time they had to, of course, come out with it pretty much and put it just out into the public. So we've had a few years. Does the doctor see any pattern, like these people who've had problems with their hearts, some of them young people? Is it because they're athletes and they should have taken it easy instead of still continuing their strenuous sports? Or, you know, could he comment on it? And that's it. Thank you.
Yeah, are we able to make conclusions about side effects?
You kind of run two things together there, so I'll try to kind of separate them a little bit. And certainly, if you think about how quickly Paxlovid and how quickly Remdesivir came to market, it's way outside of what the normal is. We would have had large studies. But in the heat of the moment, we needed to do that, and the FDA was as safe as they possibly could to make sure that they were going to put a medication out there that worked, and we saw that it did. Now, we have seen rebound cases with Paxlovid, so we've seen patients who take Paxlovid, they get better, boy, they're done, and, you know, a week, 2 weeks later, they have symptoms back, so the rebound effect there. But it's interesting, we even see that with antibiotics with infections. You know, I think my pneumonia is cleared up. I take my course of antibiotics, and unfortunately, it can come back. So you have to remember that we're treating an infectious process, and we're going to try to make sure that we don't have the patient on the medication too long. We're going to have it on an appropriate length of time so that the illness is gone. So as we get more and more data on Paxlovid, what's going to happen? We're probably going to see some changes as far as how long and how often. Now, as far as the other part about the heart and that, got to remember that the Paxlovid is not damaging the heart. What's damaging the heart is the virus and the inflammation from the virus. So individuals with long COVID, as we talked last week or the week before, you know, we're starting to see more long COVID cases and symptoms come up well after the infection. So we're still trying to get our arms around that. But the medications, the Paxlovid, the remdesivir, the vaccine, those really are fighting the infection. They're not causing any problems in the lungs or heart. So really, we need to make sure we understand what the medications are for, what the vaccines are for, and what's the damage that the virus is doing if we don't treat it.
You know, I've always wondered about with really any kind of medication, antibiotics or COVID vaccine or whatever, I assume a standard dose is given to everybody for a vaccine, for example. But as you were saying, with the course of antibiotics, does an obese person take as much as a petite person, or does the obese person need more because their metabolism is bigger?
Correct. So it's interesting. You know, we do that with pediatrics, right? All of our pediatric medicines, I shouldn't say all, but almost all of them are weight-based. So as we grow, we get to a point of being an adult, and we know that those are not going to change that much whether the person weighs, you know, 200 pounds or weighs 250 pounds. What we're probably more concerned about in those patients is, tell me what their renal function is. In other words, how well do their kidneys work and how well does their liver work? Because that's often where these drugs are broken down. So we'll make adjustments based on their kidney function versus based on their weight. There are a couple that we will do weight-based, and there's a couple that we actually test throughout the course of the treatment to make sure that the antibiotic is hitting an appropriate level. But that's just a few drugs, and mainly on the inpatient in the hospital setting.
As always, great information. Always appreciate you visiting with us on Sunday morning. Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Central DuPage Hospital. Have a great day, Kev. Thank you.
You got it, Dean. We'll talk soon. Thanks.
You know, I think I came up with a solution for the triathlon, canceling the swimming portion of the event.
And what might that be?
Well, they can't swim in the lake because of the dangerous conditions, right?
6-foot waves and cold weather. Yes, it's dangerous.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want to be out on a boat on 6-foot waves.
No, of course not. So instead, you just go over to Shedd Aquarium and swim around in the dolphin
with
tank.
With the dolphins. The set dolphins, up a route.
They have some beluga whales there.
Yeah. Good escorts.
If you can, maybe you can't swim the same amount of time, but I'm going to guess it's equally as challenging.
Especially maneuvering around a beluga whale, right?
Yeah. You're welcome. You're welcome, triathlon people. Andy Mazur at Ravinia last night. Doing the shout dance.
Oh, we were shouting.
The Isley Brothers appearing at Ravinia last night with Boys to Men.
Yep.
And music critic around town, Andy Mazur, was there.
Yeah, not a blade of grass to be seen at Ravinia last night.
That's all Andy does now is go to concerts.
Well, I figure, I need to have something to fall back on.
It's, it's summer, right?
Yeah, it's summer.
Got to enjoy these things while we can.
Exactly right. And there was a hint of fall in the air last night, I got to tell you that. I was not appropriately dressed for the wind conditions last night. But what an energetic show.
It was a little chilly last night. So who opens the show? The Isley Brothers?
The Isley Brothers opened up. Yeah, Isley Brothers opened up. And Ron Isley, he's Ron, right?
It is Ron.
Ronald, okay.
I think he's the last remaining original Isley Brothers.
He's 82 and an incredible storyteller, first of all.
Wow.
And
hey, Schwanee's your age.
Still has a lot of energy. And he had a nice band with him, and they were doing all of his hits, and they were very, very complimentary of the Boys to Men. They wanted everybody to you know, continued to be energetic for them. And
nice.
Boys to Men and Kind had another round of applause for the Isley Brothers, who were guys that they looked up to
sure.
as musical influences. But the Boys to Men show was really interesting. I mean, I can't help myself. I go to this this setlist.fm to kind of get an idea of what these shows are going to be like. And I got to be honest, when I looked at the set list for Boys to Men, it was only 12 songs. And I'm thinking to myself, 12 songs back in our DJ days, that was about an hour.
Yeah, that's nothing.
And I'm thinking, man, how are they gonna carry this show? I'll tell you, they did. And these guys were, they sounded exactly like they did before. That's 30 something years ago that the height of their popularity came in. They were featured in the movie Boomerang, a couple of their songs. Yeah.
They're great songs.
Yeah.
But as you were telling me earlier, it was they didn't weird. Do very many of their own songs.
No. So they started off with Motown Philly, probably one of their most recognizable popular songs. On Bended Knee, which was theirs. And then It's So Hard to Say Goodbye to Yesterday. That's the one that was featured in Boomerang.
Right.
And then they kind of went into cover band. It was amazing. They did a Lenny Kravitz cover of Are You Gonna Go My Way into American Woman. Then they did the Beatles' Come Together. Then they did Eric Clapton's Wonderful Tonight. Then they did Journey's Open Arms, which was fantastic, by the way.
Yeah.
And then they wrap up the show with I'll Make Love to You, and then Mariah Carey cover One Sweet Day.
Yeah, which I think they did with Mariah
Carey. Yeah, they did it with her. And it's funny, they said, like, yeah, the young lady that usually does this show, the song with us is not here tonight. So they had the audience filling in for her. And then they... you know, fittingly ended it with End of the Road.
Right.
And no encore, and that was just that was the end of the show.
Interesting.
But the storytelling, they were talking about their musical influences and why they were doing Wonderful Tonight. Because during the pandemic, some of these guys that didn't play instruments taught themselves how to play instruments. One learned how to play the guitar. One learned piano. The guy that learned guitar learned it on YouTube.
Interesting.
And he played last night Wonderful Tonight, which was fantastic. I mean, Eric Clapton.
It's an Eric Clapton.
Yeah,
song.
He did it. He did it much better. But yeah. when you're talking about these covers, and I'm looking at the set list before, I'm thinking, how are they going to pull off Open Arms from Journey?
Right.
And they were talking about how they went to this School of Arts in Philadelphia, and how their teachers there and their professors were trying to expose them to music that they did not grow up with.
Right.
So these are their words last night. They said, you know, we used to listen to the black stations. And then once in a while, we'd sneak down to see what the white people were listening to. And they heard Open Arms from Journey and thought it was one of the more perfect
right.
kind of...
for their style.
Yeah, for their style. Yeah. And, you know, they talked about their journey from the hood, as they said yesterday, to the height of their popularity. And they kind of gravitated towards Journey because of the name of the band. And then they also just loved the song. And they did it, and they did it fantastically last night. I got to be honest with you, it was really, really good.
Yeah, that sounds really cool.
Yeah, it was an interesting show. I mean, there was a lot of, oh my God, there was so, the diversity in that crowd yesterday was unlike any I've ever seen.
And it was packed.
It was packed
to the gills.
The pavilion was just jammed, and there was not a blade of grass to be seen. I mean, the only time I've seen that crowded was last year for Sting.
Yeah.
So it was great. It was a fantastic show.
Fun.
Yeah.
Schwani, remember when we used to be in that boy band back in the day?
Yeah. I was listening.
Acapella boy band called Sleepy, Grumpy, and Dopey. You can decide which was which.
I was all of the above. But, Andy, I think you missed your calling. You are a marvelous critic and a marvelous observer.
Yes, he is.
Wow.
Taking it all in.
You really covered it all there.
It was really interesting. I mean, I did not know how they were going to pull this show off because... it's, you know, there was an intermission, too, between the Isley Brothers and Boys to Men, which seemed to kind of last a little longer than I think anybody really anticipated. And, you start to think, oh, okay, we got, another hour, an hour and a half, whatever. And they come right out of the gates with Motown Philly, and it was over after that. I mean, everybody was on their feet the whole night.
I think I would have been disappointed. If I had read the set list and saw that they weren't doing a lot of their own songs, I would have been disappointed because they have a lot of
they do
their own songs, which they clearly decided not to do in favor of some of these cover versions.
Yeah, and they, you know, they wanted to showcase themselves too. They were talking about themselves becoming not just singers but artists.
Yeah,
and they wanted to feature the, you know, the journey that they made from just being guys that were, you know, in high school together and impressing Michael Bivins to give them a chance.
Yeah,
and that's the story of Motown Philly basically, and it was incredible. It kind of harkened me back because I was playing those songs of theirs during my DJ days
back
in Peoria.
Your DJ days.
Yeah, from, you know, the late 80s into the mid-90s, and that's pretty much where they were on top.
Their harmonies are just absolutely amazing.
And their vocal variety with the members of the band as well, the falsetto, the deep bass voice, and then the couple of voices in between.
Yep.
I mean, it works, and it still worked after all those years.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, it was great.
I was at a wedding last night. Nice wedding. Had fun. What'd you do last night, Schwani?
Nothing.
You didn't do anything?
I didn't do anything
last
night.
Watch TV?
No, I didn't watch TV. I called Gilda.
Read a book?
For a while.
Talked on the phone?
Okay. Talked on the phone.
That's it?
That's
and sat in the dark?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
I don't want to waste electricity. What do you think? I'm made of money?
Glad you all had a nice time.
Yeah, we had a great time. Sorry that you literally did not do one thing.
I didn't do a thing last night.
Right.
Nope.
Boy, but just hearing that takes me back to our days in the boy band, though, doesn't it, Johnny?
Yes.
You know, long, lonely sleepy, days on the road.
Sleepy, dopey, and grumpy. Our biggest hit was, we did also an a cappella version of Jimmy Crack Corn that
I like the a cappella version of Get Off My Lawn. That was fantastic.
Jimmy Crack Corn and I don't care.
Jimmy Crack Corn and I don't care. Jimmy Crack Corn. How does this go now? Where does this go? Jimmy, I got
it. Doot, 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 doot.
I don't remember what the...
I don't either.
Something about going away, right?
The farmer's gone away?
Or something, yeah.
The farmer always ruins everything in this.
The farmer in the dell. The farmer in the dell.
That was on the B side. That was on the B side of Jimmy Crack Corn. One of the scenes from the new movie that's called Golda that very quietly opened in theaters on Friday. Interestingly, the studios did not screen this for critics first, which really surprised me because it's the kind of movie that you would normally see lots of attention for leading up to award season that's just right around the corner. I don't know if that has something to do with the actor strike that's going on right now and actors not really doing any publicity whatsoever, no interviews, no nothing. But they didn't even screen this movie for the critics. And I was really looking forward to seeing this movie. It's about the former Prime Minister of Israel, Golda Meir, and it stars Helen Mirren as Golda Meir. And I am one of those people, you know, that subscribe to the Helen Mirren can do no wrong theory because she's fantastic in everything that she's in. This is no exception. She's amazing. I'd be shocked if she didn't get an Academy Award nomination for her role in this movie, which is centered on the portion of her prime ministry that slightly precedes the Yom Kippur War and her guiding her country and her generals, her military, through this attack on Israel. There were lots of allegations that she did not handle it properly. That's sort of where this movie begins, with a panel investigating whether or not she acted appropriately in dealing with the attack on Israel, whether she did it in a timely fashion or not, whether she had information which was not revealed. I don't want to give too much away, but it's about that period of this war, which was launched on Israel during one of the highest holy periods in Jewish life. So you know, it's a history story, but it is a fascinating motion picture. And as I say, Helen Mirren, once again, just completely knocks it out of the park. She is so transformed into Golda Meir. Liev Schreiber plays Henry Kissinger in this movie. There are lots of other actors who are not as well known, playing Moshe Dayan and other prominent figures in the Israeli government and military at the time. But it's a really interesting movie. I went to see it just on my own on Friday because as I say, they released the film quietly. They didn't tell the studios, which normally would set up screenings for critics so we could be talking about it, did not. I'm not 100% sure why they did that, because it's really quite a good movie. Now, you know, it's not for everyone in these days where you need Barbie to sell movie tickets, or you need, you know, Indiana Jones or, you know, superheroes and this and that. This is a biographical drama, and it's one that's really well done. I think you have to be, you know, into history probably to be a little more into this, you know, than you might expect to be. I mean, Schwani's busy getting ready for the next newscast right now, but being the history buff that he is, this one's got Dave Schwann's name written all over it to go and see. I hope that he has the opportunity to go see it. Anyway, I'm giving it a Dean's List B+, because I think Helen Mirren's performance is so strong in this movie, and it's playing in theaters all over. And I should mention to you that today it has been designated as National Cinema Day. There is an organization which represents movie theaters all over the country, the National Theaters Association, National Theater Owners Association, and they have proclaimed today National Cinema Day. And what that means to you is that you can go see a movie today for $4, $4. That's participating theaters, which, because the major theater chains are all participating in this, which means that it is practically all the theaters, all the movies, all the screenings, all the formats, including IMAX formats, you should be able to get in and see for $4. So whether it's Golda or whether it's Barbie or Oppenheimer or Blue Beetle, which I also gave a good review to last week, the new superhero movie that's out. There are lots of pretty good movies that are out there. And today, Sunday, is the day that you can go see them for $4. Now, you know, concessions are still going to be ridiculously priced, as they always are. They're going to show you a ton of previews, a ton of the trailers ahead of time, so they can try to entice you to come back later in the year and see some other motion pictures. But, you know, you can't beat a $4 ticket price admission to get in. It's a lot easier than a $10 price, or $12 or $15 or $20 in some of the theaters. So check your listings on this. You know, go online and take a look at the movie theaters to see which theaters are participating in all of this. And take advantage of that if you as you can. Schwani, I was just saying, this Golda movie.
Yes.
That's got you written all over.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that definitely sounds very intriguing, very interesting to see. And Helen Mirren? Absolutely. I'm with you. She can do no wrong either.
She can do no wrong. She is spectacular. This movie also, by the way, intersperses actual footage of the real Golda Meir with Helen Mirren footage. So it goes back and forth, and sometimes you absolutely cannot tell the difference.
Wow.
That's the makeup job that they've done on that. Anyway, we'll get into our theater segment after we take a quick check of some news. All right, 10:35. Lots of new shows that are opening up for the fall season in Chicago. Telling you about Little Shop of Horrors at the Paramount. Going to be going out to see on September the 10th. In a few minutes, we're going to be joined by the president of the League of Chicago Theaters, to give us a little rundown of some of the best of what we can expect in the Chicago area for the fall season. But one of the things that I wanted to bring to your attention was a show that was here in Chicago for a pretty good amount of time and got absolute rave reviews. The show called I'm Not a Comedian, I'm Lenny Bruce, that starred Ronnie Marmo, who was nice enough to come and visit with us here in the studio several times. Ronnie is bringing the show back to the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie for a special one-night, two-performance evening on Saturday, September the 9th. The North Shore Center for the Performing Arts at 2 p.m. and 8 p.m. And what a coincidence, Ronnie Marmo would be on the phone with us right now to talk about it all. Hello there, my friend.
Good morning, Dean. How are you?
Doing very well. I was so excited when I heard that you were going to be bringing the show back. I'm sorry it's only for one night, but I know you're doing a tour and you're going all over the place, you know, and spreading the Lenny Bruce-ness of
it
all.
That's true. But, you know, you're not as excited as me, I promise you. I am so excited. But we are, we're doing two shows in one day, a matinee and an evening. And when I got the opportunity to come to Skokie, I thought, well, originally, I think about 4 years ago, I thought about bringing the show originally to Skokie. And you know, we turned out we had a beautiful run at the Royal George. And so, long story short, I'm just excited when this came up. And it's 900 seats, so that'll be pretty exciting as well.
Yeah, it's a nice venue for a show like this. When was your Royal George run? Was it pre-pandemic? I was trying to remember.
Exactly.
Now. I think it was.
Yeah, we opened, I think it was 2019 in the fall, and we ran through March 14th, 2020. And I told everybody, I'll see you guys in a few weeks. I'm going to go home and just lay low. And that turned into 2 years. And then we came back and we did it the Venus, which is a part of the Mercury. It's a little cabaret
right.
space.
Right.
We did it there for another 5.5 months or 6 months. So we basically bookend the pandemic. And now we're coming back through, heading all over the country. But this was a great opportunity. So
yeah, this show is so provocative and visceral, and it's about the life and career of maybe one of the most controversial comedians of all time, Lenny Bruce. Even though he's not a comedian, he was a comedian back in the day, but not like one that we've seen before. You know, not like in a day when we had Milton Berle and Sid Caesar and. These Myron Cohen, those kind of storytellers. Along comes this guy who turns stand-up comedy on its head.
That is true, Dean. He was the first guy not to have really a set routine. And he talked about all the taboo subjects, you know, things that people didn't want to touch. Religion, politics. Funny enough, many of the things he talked about, sadly, we're still talking about. I don't know what happened, but it seems we've progressed in many ways, and we've regressed in a few, that's for sure. So Lenny was definitely one of a kind, and now, you know, he influenced everyone. I mean, you have, you know, Chappelle and Chris Rock and, you know, just basically everybody, Sarah Silverman, you know. So he was definitely more than a comedian, but certainly a very important one. And when I watch his material now from back then, I can't believe how much trouble he was in for really basically nothing compared to what we're dealing with today. So,
interestingly, though, in this world in which we live now and the so-called cancel culture, Lenny Bruce was really the first one to be canceled by culture, wasn't he?
You know, it's so funny you say that because I say that and I haven't heard anyone else say it. So that's really funny, Dean. I'm always like, he was the original canceled. Yes, he was. And except, you know, they hounded this guy. And eventually, you know, he died of an overdose at 40 years old. But we, you know, people often say that he died from an overdose of the police. They just hounded him and canceled him, and which just made him more popular.
Yeah,
you know?
Because of the kinds of things that he was talking about. And the world in which we were living, you know, those very vanilla days of the late 50s and the early 60s where, you know, you couldn't do anything controversial back then.
He got arrested, yeah, in Chicago for the first time. That was his first arrest at the Gate of Horn for doing a bit called Religions Incorporated. And he didn't say one dirty word. He just made the Pope Jewish, and he had this whole funny thing. And he just had these, you know, he said there's this group of people on Madison Avenue, and the Pope is there, and he's Jewish. And he made this whole thing. And a Catholic cop was offended and arrested him.
Isn't that amazing? Arresting somebody for... you know, doing satire, really. But
doing satire.
Yeah, the world had never seen anything like that. Now, Ronnie's show, I'm Not a Comedian, I'm Lenny Bruce, is directed by Chicago's own Joe Mantegna. How much are you guys still tweaking and changing? And I would think that might be just sort of like an everyday thing with a show like this, is it?
You're absolutely right, Dean. Like, since I've been in Chicago, I've swapped out two major bits. We've definitely added some other stuff. So if you have seen the show, I feel like it's different enough where it's still be worth your time. But Joe and I are always working. In fact, tomorrow I'm going up to his office because I wanted to show him something in the play and he's still directing it, and he's very funny, and he's as committed today. Well, you guys know Joe. I mean, he's the nicest guy in the world, and I know how Chicago feels about him. But what a great guy. Generally speaking, when you do a play, the director comes opening weekend, maybe the second week to tweak a few things. I've done 424 performances, and he's seen 100.
Wow.
Literally. Yeah, he comes. I'm like, Joe, what are you doing here? He's like, hey, I want to see the show, kid. I love the show.
Hey, I want to see, I just hear him.
That's how he talks. Hey, kid, don't worry. And he sits there. One day he stressed me out. I see him every day sitting in the audience with an open notebook and a pen, but he doesn't write anything. He doesn't write anything. So one day I said, Joe, please give me a note. You drive me crazy. You stress me out with the open notebook. Give me a note. And he goes, you want to know my note is for you, kid? I go, what? He goes, don't ever stop doing this show. It's beautiful.
Oh man, that is a nice compliment.
Yeah, that's my guy. I mean, and I know he's Chicago's guy.
He's the greatest. Joe is just absolutely the greatest. I love him. And
so genuine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the Chicago-ness in him coming out. You know, you get
totally.
You get it straight no matter what. The show is going to be at the North Shore Center for Performing Arts in beautiful Skokie, Illinois. It's going to be Saturday, September the 9th. Two shows, one in the afternoon at 2 o'clock, one at 8 o'clock. And you can get tickets by going to NorthShoreCenter.org. NorthShoreCenter.org for I'm Not a Comedian, I'm Lenny Bruce, and our pal Ronnie Marmo. I hope we get a chance to see you, Ronnie, when you're here. But I'm glad you could join us today. It's great to hear your voice.
Thank you, Dean. You too. And I appreciate your support so much. And if you guys want to read some reviews when we're in Chicago, just go to LennyBruceOnStage.com and you could get all the Chicago reviews. And we hope to see you out there. So thank you so much.
Good deal. Good to talk to you. Ronnie Marmo coming up next, the president of the League of Chicago Theaters. What else is going on stage this fall in Chicago? So excited about Hamilton coming back to the Chicago area. It is one of the many highlights that we can look forward to in the fall season on stage in Chicago. Here to recap it all for us is Marissa Lynn Jones, who's the executive director of the League of Chicago Theaters. Marissa, thank you for joining us. Always nice to talk to you.
On and talking about theater.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you can join us. I guess Hamilton coming back to Chicago after its amazing run here in Chicago, first place that it came after it won all the Tony Awards and, you know, took New York by storm, now is coming back to the Chicago area. When and where will we be seeing Hamilton again?
Oh, such a great show, and it's through Broadway in Chicago at the Niederlander Theater, and it starts September 13th.
Oh, wow.
I almost got caught up in the music there for a moment.
I know. When I start playing that soundtrack, I get all caught up with it because it's so genius, really, the diversity of the music and the actors, and it takes me back to seeing Lin-Manuel Miranda and, of course, Miguel Cervantes.
Chicago ties.
Yes.
Is really connected to Chicago community. So this is a great way to bring Hamilton back and really celebrate.
Yeah, September 13th through December 3rd, to be exact. At the James M. Niederlander Theater on Randolph Street downtown. What are you most looking forward to this fall in Chicago?
Oh, my goodness. There's so many great new shows coming. And we have, to kick it off, we have Destinos with Clata. The Chicago International Latino Theater Festival is happening. So these are actually shows you can see across the city in different places. And there's so many new works coming to our stages here as we welcome these international theater companies. And so I'm really excited. There's over 17 productions. You can see them across the city, Steppenwolf, Good Men, Teatro, Tarkuri, and there's shows for everybody.
Yeah, this obviously is a sign that people are coming back to the theaters, that the slump, I mean, the complete shutdown, really, of theaters during the pandemic, which put a lot of people in peril, that things are, back or, well on their way back with such an ambitious season that's coming.
Oh, absolutely. We're excited to welcome back audiences now that, we've had our summertime Chicago, we've had our festival seasons. It's time to get cozy and get back in the seats and come see the shows. We're all kicking off our fall seasons across the city with all our different member theaters. So it's time to buy your ticket right now. And we actually have a great promotion right now for those who are teetering on buying a ticket. We've got tickets for 20 going right now.
Tell us what that is.
So tickets for 20, you'll get a ticket for $20. We're on HotTix, so on HotTix.org, you can find special prices for just about all of our fall season shows. Make sure that people go grab their theater guides. Our fall theater guide is coming out here for September. And we have, over 25 productions that will have tickets up for $20 from August 24th through Sunday, September 3rd. So this is the perfect way to see a number of shows across the city, get back acclimated to getting in the seats and going to support your local theater companies. So it's a great opportunity I would want everyone to take advantage of.
Yeah, and this is, as you say, it's going on now through next Sunday, September the 3rd. And you can get information at, if you are a theater goer and you're not checking hotticks.org, you are not
you're
doing yourself
out.
A favor. It's just the greatest. It's HOTTIX, hotticks.org, where there are discounts like this, $20 tickets, but often half price tickets for shows, incredible discounts for shows. You must check HotTix before you decide to go to any theaters. So here's just one more reason to do that. What are you hearing about A Taste of Soul? This is the show that is actually, it's officially opening today, this afternoon.
Yes, it's opening today, and anything that BET, that Black Ensemble Theater, does is always amazing. It always gets people on their feet and excited and dancing. And you've got, songs and things from Al Green to Peaches and Herb and Barry White. And so if you like listening to those hits and hits from Gladys Knight, then this is definitely the show for you.
Yeah, it's a musical tribute to some of the top R&B and soul artists of the past several decades. It opens today and will run through October the 15th at the Black Ensemble Theater. We're going to be having some of the performers on with us, both on TV and radio, to kind of, give that everybody a look at that.
That'll be wonderful.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. I'm such a big fan of Black Ensemble Theater and the work of the great Jackie Taylor and all of the people that she's brought up through the years. What else? What else should we be going to see right now? We've got so many amazing shows right now.
Yeah, if we keep on that pathway a little bit, we have Blues for an Alabama Sky at Remy Bumpo Theater, which ties into that song, and it's about a jazz singer who got fired from the Cotton Club and just her pathway as she navigates love and friendship after that moment, and it's set in Harlem, and so. You know, we've got enough music throughout for people who want music, for people who want straight plays. We've got enough for everybody.
Yeah, I was just looking at the list here that includes Guys and Dolls at the Beverly Guild Theater. We've got Gypsy, one of the classic musicals of all time, up at the
Marriott.
Yeah,
yeah.
Marriott in Lincolnshire. But in terms of straightaway dramas from theater companies that are sort of famous for them, we have Night Watch at the Raven Theater. We've got The Lifespan of a Fact from the Timeline Theater Company.
Absolutely, yes, which always does great lobby displays and really incorporates the audience into the work.
Yeah, I mean, there's some amazing shows. And we should mention also the League of Chicago Theaters Gala, which is coming up in a couple of weeks, right?
Yes, it's a celebration. We're so excited. You know, this is our first gala since the pandemic, and it's really going to be a celebration of our resilience as a Chicago community. Chicago is the incubator of theater stories, of theater companies. It is a place where people come to connect and collaborate. It's where great playwrights and actors and audiences are able to thrive. And so this is really a time for us to say that fall is here. The theater season is here. It's back. We're happy to be here. We're happy to welcome you. And for all of the artists and administrators and crew members and union workers who worked so hard to keep the lights on and keep the doors open through the pandemic, now is a time for us to celebrate and to support and show that support and do that through, you know, raising money for league programs, which goes back to the artist, which we, you know, we re-grant to artists and theaters to help them stay open, to stay thriving, and continue to advocate for their work across the city. So I'm really excited. It's going to be my first time ever throwing a gala.
We're
going to have fun. It'll be September 19th, and it's going to be right in West Loop at the Amazing Space. And we have a wonderful opportunity this year to give back and really open it up, because we believe theater is for everyone. We're really making sure this is a gala for all people. It's going to be after work on a Tuesday. We're going to have fun. We're going to have light bites. It's called It's Showtime, a celebration of Chicago theater. And so there'll be some nice surprises throughout the evening.
Yeah, and among the things that will happen will be some special awards for Rosario Vargas of I hope
of Aguillon Theater.
I was going to say, go ahead.
Yeah, the Artistic Excellence Award, which we're very excited to honor people who have been doing this work and really started with this work in the city of Chicago through its history. And then so Rosario Vargas of Aguillon Theater with Artistic Excellence Award, and then Eileen Lucario of Broadway in Chicago with the Lifetime Achievement Award. So very special, both two women who have been trailblazers in our community.
I wanted to point out Eileen, Rosario I don't know, but Eileen Lucario is a longtime friend. I've been working with Eileen literally for decades, promoting shows. She is one of the vice presidents of Broadway in Chicago, and we're in constant contact talking about the shows that are coming into Chicago, who's coming in, what's going to happen, you know, for these big shows, these big touring companies that come through the Chicago area. A lot of this would not have happened except for the hard work of Eileen Lucario.
Absolutely.
So I'm very happy to see that she's going to get some special recognition. You know, just having to deal with me on a regular basis, somebody should get an award for that. So
well, we hope you're there to help us celebrate.
Right.
Dean.
There should be an award that's called You Put Up With Dean Richards All These Years Award.
Right. We love your reviews of theater, and it's always great to, you know, to have that support.
Well, that's very nice of you.
Thank you.
Very nice of you. I have always been a big fan of the League of Chicago Theaters and the Hot Ticks, because if, you know, I want people to be able to go to theater. It can be expensive sometimes, but Hot Ticks makes it a lot more affordable. And again, if you go
to
HOTTIX.org, hotticks.org, you can take a look at everything that's available online. But you have some offices where people can go to purchase tickets as well, right?
Right. So we're right downtown at Block 37. That's right on 108 North State Street. So if you want to come and talk to our brand ambassadors, they're happy to talk about all of the shows that are going on and what to look forward to. They can help you purchase your tickets right there at our station in Block 37. And so please come see us if you need help or give us a call. We're always happy to talk about theater.
Good deal. Or ChicagoPlays.com is the league's website. Marissa Lynn Jones, Executive Director, League of Chicago Theaters. I hope you have a great day today. Thank you.
I hope you have a great day, and I hope to see you all in the audience soon. Thank you so much, Dean.
There's still triathloning outside.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That closure on Lakeshore Drive, DeSable Lakeshore Drive, is in effect until noon. Yeah. The southbound lanes.
That can't be inconveniencing anyone. Never mind us.
You really didn't complain much this
morning. Never mind us and the trauma that we all had to go through.
I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Unless you had something else to bring up here. Far be it for me to interrupt you.
I did, but whatever is on your mind is far more important.
Okay.
About
15 minutes ago.
I was going to do my annual joke about the Dean Richards triathlon.
Oh, well, go ahead.
Remember when we were over at the other building at the old dump on Michigan Avenue?
And you were doing the show out of the mattress store.
Which is now a mattress. A lot of people don't know over there. Now there's a liquor store and a currency exchange and a mattress store. I think that it's gone downhill since we've left, to tell you the truth. But we used to, you know, say we were going to have our own triathlon where you go 50 feet eating a cake.
And donuts and pancakes.
Well, 50 feet eating cake first, 50 feet eating greasy fried chicken, and then 50 feet eating as many Rolaids as you possibly can.
I'm going to have to get in touch with Bruce Buckley, who used to do traffic for us on the morning. And,
oh, yeah.
See if he came up with a name
cakewalk.
For it. Cakewalk. That's what it was. Yes.
Yeah, we wanted to. That was one of the first things we said we were going to do that we never did. Of like thousands that we've not
right. But the cakewalk.
But
yes.
Bruce Buckley used to say that we should have this event when they have triathlons and marathons and things like that, where you only have to walk. If anyone walks too fast, they're disqualified. But you would walk eating chocolate cake. Oh. Right?
That would be so fantastic.
Portillo's?
Oh. There you go.
Get some Portillo's
there you go.
To sponsor us?
Mm.
Anywho. That's what I was going to say. What were you going to say? What were you going to ask me?
All right. Well, I was going to, about 15 or 20 minutes ago.
I like to talk street.
About 15 or 20 minutes ago, when you were talking to Marissa Lynn Jones,
yes.
You made the comment that there should be an award of putting up with Dean Richards.
Right.
I think I may be a contender for this award. Andy, definitely in the running. Jack, now.
Right.
What do you think?
Well, since I have said...
There should be a short list.
Well, that's not possible.
I emphasize short.
That's not possible because we've already... Our phone lines have already been jammed with former producers. Former producers.
Not to mention every listener.
So far, we've heard...
The last 30 years.
Lyle Dean has called up. He wants an award.
Oh, definitely. Yes.
Don Porter.
Don Norton.
Don Porter. Who's Don Porter? Who's Don Porter? Don Norton. But, the producer's line is...
Don Porter.
What did I say? Do I know Don Porter?
No, I don't know.
I don't either.
If you do or not. Andy, tell me more about those awards, the Boys to Men concert.
Better get those awards in before the memory's completely gone.
I think so. So, what do you think? What do you think? Put up with Dean Richards.
Yeah, I wasn't really paying attention to what you were saying.
Okay.
So, one of my favorite groups, The Police. Their legendary guitarist, Andy Summers, headed to the Chicago area. And we talked with him one-on-one. Andy Summers, a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, legendary guitarist for The Police, joining us in about a half an hour. So we're talking about the Cakewalk, the event that we've been wanting to do for quite a long time, where you walk and eat cake, and you walk and eat fried chicken, and you do all that stuff. Somebody texted in a similar event that goes on in Springfield once a year that is called the Fat Blank 5K Race for Charity.
In Springfield. I like that title.
Well, it's not blank is what I'm putting in.
Okay.
Yeah, it's called something else.
I got you. All right.
But it's the Fat Blank 5K and Street Party for Charity, and it's going to be May 10th and 11th of next year.
My birthday weekend.
Oh, perfect. So I would love to go get a t-shirt that says Fat Blank on it. So thank you for telling me about that. One more place we can do the show.
I was just going to say we could do the show from there. And I can think of one or two restaurants where we can do the show down there, too.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Cozy Dog.
I only know the Steak and Shake.
No, we could go to the Cozy Dog, a legendary Route 66 eatery. Mm-mm.
What kind of free food have you gotten there?
He's angling right now.
Yeah. I've gotten food there, none of it free. I paid for it, just like everyone else.
What kind of food do they have there?
Oh, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The Cozy Dog is, it's like a corn dog, cozy dog, hot dog. I had breakfast there and had some wonderful pancakes and eggs.
Could I get a patty melt there?
Probably, yeah.
I like a good patty melt.
Yep. Been there for a long, long time.
All right. Well, We'll go eat yeah. pancakes and then go to the fat
go
blank
the fat
5K
whatever 5K thing. Yes,
count us in. We're there. Speaking of food, the Taste of Greektown is going on today over in your traditional Greektown neighborhood on Halsted Street. Roughly Halsted and Jackson, Monroe,
Halsted
Madison.
In both directions, closed between Van Buren and Monroe.
Yep.
Until 5 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of flaming cheese time. that's a lot of cheese that's
If
on
you
fire
take a
right
bus
there.
Through that area, the CTA is rerouting the number 8 and 126 buses.
All the restaurants there, set up booths in front of the restaurants. And, you can get all your delightful food that you enjoy at the Greektown restaurants and sit outside and listen to music and dancing and all that sort of thing. Somebody on the text line says that we need to get a horseshoe if we're in Springfield.
That's right, the horseshoe.
Now, remind me, I've never had a horseshoe. It's a sandwich, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've never had a horseshoe sandwich.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to look up the ingredients here because I'm having a senior moment myself on that.
Oh.
But the horseshoe is
let me go check with my friend Don Porter about that. So a couple of people have texted in.
Don Porter
is the actor who played Sally Field's father on the TV show Gidget. I have no idea where that came from. When I was trying to think of Don Norton's name, I said Don Porter. But that's who Don Porter was. He was the father on Gidget. So, oh boy, this show is just going to...
And Don DeFore was on Hazel.
The next few years on the show are going to be...
I can't wait.
It is going to be a spiral right into a big brick wall.
I can't wait. Jack will play the theme music and we'll hear nothing.
Oh, Jack and Andy are taking over the show.
Oh,
all right, Jack, let's go.
I'm ready.
Jack, we are going to need you.
Yeah. Jack's already shown his dark Dean Richards cynical side today.
I've been taking notes. He's what well I do
on,
back
he's
here.
Well on his way to take over the show. I'll just sit in the corner and complain about everything. So what is a horseshoe sandwich?
Is a horseshoe sandwich started in Springfield. It's toasted bread, a hamburger patty, with French fries and cheese sauce on top.
Oh, nice.
Wait a minute. So the sandwich has French fries in it.
Yes. Yeah. The fries, meat, and cheese sauce on a big piece of bread. Mm. And that is a very popular dish at the State Fair, of course, in Springfield.
I think that's where I first heard of it, is the at the State Fair.
Right.
They have a similar sandwich in Pittsburgh. There's a place called Primanti Brothers.
Yeah, the Philly cheesesteak sandwich.
Where they have the cheese, it's like a cheeseburger, and then they have the fries and coleslaw already on the sandwich.
That would be good, too.
It's pretty good.
I don't know if I want coleslaw in my burger.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound that bad.
Yeah,
yes,
good.
Yes, it does.
Oh, all right.
It's awful.
Now, me, Mr. Picky, I like it.
Mr. Picky?
Really?
Yeah, I loved it.
Coleslaw on a burger.
Yeah, not bad at all.
That doesn't sound like I prefer my burgers without a lot of junk on them. Mm. But the people who put a fried egg.
I can't do that.
That's gross. That's disgusting.
No, I can't do that.
I don't go for that.
That's disgusting to me. But a burger with fries on it, that doesn't seem so bad because you're probably going to have fries with your burger anyway.
Right.
Sure. Might as well put them on the burger instead of next to the burger.
Yeah. That's what I'm going to tell the paramedic when he comes to pick me up after I have my grabber from
the horseshoe.
May we have your name, sir? Yes, Don Porter. I'm Don Porter. Your driver's license does not say.
Where are you going, sir? The fat blank 5K in Springfield.
It's a cakewalk.
I'm telling you, this is the show over the next few years. I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, you should record every single show.
Yes.
Because
you may have to play them back because
this show is dilating quickly.
It's dilating?
Yes.
Oh, man.
All right. What do we have coming up? Oh, Andy Summers, I mentioned, from the police. That's going to be coming up. We're going to be talking with our friend Dustin Green. I'm checking my notes.
There we go.
I'm checking my notes on everyone's name from now on carefully. Dustin Green is a grill master with Weber, and we'll talk some barbecuing to get ready for the Labor Day weekend. And when we come back, what's your favorite game show of all time? We started the show off today remembering Bob Barker, who passed away at the age of 99 after 50 years on daytime TV, a legend on daytime TV from The Price is Right and Truth or Consequences, Adam Sandler classics.
Oh, yes.
It's just one of the great scenes of all time. That wouldn't make any sense if I played for you on the radio, but look it up on YouTube today. It is absolutely hilarious where Adam Sandler takes a beating by Bob Barker. That is so funny.
Oh, that's great.
But Schwani, favorite game show of all time?
I could name a number of them, but I think Jeopardy is at the top of the list.
No, Mr. Fancy Pants.
Ooh, get me wrong. I love Price is Right,
I'm so
and Let's Make a Deal. But I'm a Jeopardy guy.
You like Jeopardy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I guess I like Jeopardy, too.
What do you mean you guess?
Well, Match Game is my favorite.
Match Game?
That's mine, too.
Remember the dating game?
Oh, I did love the dating
game. The dating game.
I love the dating game and the newlywed game.
And the newlywed game. What was that again?
Bob Eubanks.
Bob Eubanks. Bob Eubanks.
There was always one question about Whoopi, and not Goldberg.
Correct. They had to beep a lot, too.
Gentlemen, where you ask the question of the men with the women backstage not able to hear the answers, and then they bring the women out to see if they can match the answers.
There was another show kind of like that. That was Bert Convy and Tattletales.
Oh, yes.
Tattletales was good. I want to go back even further. How about to tell the truth.
Oh, yeah.
And What's My Line?
Wow.
Don't forget Sale of the Century as well.
Those are good shows. Those are all good, very, very good shows. Favorite game show of all time in honor of Bob Barker here today, 312-981-7200. Remembering Bob Barker this morning, died yesterday at age 99. Hosts of The Price is Right, Truth or Consequences, number of variety shows, maybe one of the most prominent animal rights advocates of all time, along with Betty White, really, reminding everyone to get those pets spayed or neutered. Being remembered very fondly by a lot of people, as I mentioned, I think for a generation of a couple of generations, really, of people, he was the guy that you watched on TV when you stayed home from school because you were sick. It's when you got to see Bob Barker on TV. So we're trying to remember some of the favorite game shows of all time. 312-981-7200 is our telephone number. Someone here is remembering Jim Lang and the host of The Dating Game. Oh, Dating Game was one of the great shows of all time. I wish there was a channel that ran the old Dating Game shows. I don't necessarily want them to reboot the show, but I would love to see those old shows in all their 70s inappropriate glory someplace, you know, on a cable channel somewhere. I know that there are channels that run old game shows, but I've never seen Dating Game on there. I would love to see that. Let me see what else we have here. Supermarket Sweep with David Rupert. I don't think I've ever seen that show. I've seen some supermarket game shows.
You don't remember Supermarket Sweep?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that was on in the 60s, and then I think that they resurrected it. They did a revival of it here not long ago.
I don't remember that one. Do you remember a game show called Video Village?
Nope.
Video Village. Stubby K.
Oh, wow.
Was the host of Video Village. I don't remember the premise. I don't remember, you know, you went around. It was like a big board game, and people, you know, would run around the pieces of the board game. But I don't remember anything else except I remember watching that show. Wheel of Fortune, of course, getting a lot of mentions on our text line. Family Feud, of course. Some of the probably Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy are the biggest game shows of all time, right? That seems like that would be right. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Remember what a big deal that was?
Oh, yeah, Regis Philbin.
When that first came on the air.
Yes, yes.
That, you know, phone a friend and, you know, My Final Choice.
Yeah, the phrase final answer, entered the lingo.
Right, right. I remember well when Don Porter was on that show and he played the game. Let's see what else we have.
Andy Taylor, our new sports anchor.
Andy Taylor.
Right? I'm getting ready for it.
The original password with Alan Ludden. Alan Ludden. I used to love that show.
Yeah. You know, one of the big draws there was they would have celebrities on from the popular sitcoms playing with ordinary folks.
Ordinary people.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep, exactly right. The Gong Show, of course.
Gong Show. Yes.
Gene, the Dancing Machine.
I loved that so much. I got a lot of that when I was a kid. Dean, the Dancing Machine.
There you go.
I wonder, is that where Spike got? Remember, Spike used to call me Dean. What did he call me?
Dino. Well, no.
Dino, the Disco Machino.
Yeah.
I wonder if that came from Gene, the Dancing Machine. Next time I see Spike, I'll have to ask him that. You Bet Your Life with Groucho Marx. That was a good one. Concentration, also another great one. Who remembers Jack Bailey's Queen for a Day? Wow. These are some of the great ones of all time. Maybe if Match Game wasn't my favorite, which it is, Hollywood Squares with Peter Marshall.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Was fantastic. And Paul Lynde. Center Square.
Oh boy.
George Gobel, bottom right.
George Gobel. Charlie Weaver.
Rosemarie was always there.
Yes. Smokes.
That was such a funny show. And I think that's another one where they had the martini bar going in the back.
Oh, yeah.
Much like we do on this show. A lot of people don't know that we're pretty soused by the time 9 o'clock rolls around every Sunday morning. The Police. Boy, a 1980s classic. Every little thing she does is magic. One of the most popular rock and roll bands of all time. Grammy Award winners, all inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, including our next guest on the show, the legendary guitarist for The Police, Andy Summers, who is set out on a tour of cities around North America and what he's calling a missing string tour, which he plays solo songs. He delves into the Police music library and reinterprets many of the songs from the Police on his own on guitar. He is also very much involved in photography and has put up exhibits around the world, most notably at the Metropolitan Museum of Art when COVID hit and everything stopped. But this Cracked Lens and Missing String tour will be coming into the Chicago area. It's going to be at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts. So we've been talking about a little bit earlier for Ronnie Marmo bringing his show, the Lenny Bruce Show, to the Chicago area. The night before, Andy Summers is going to be at the North Shore Center in Skokie performing as well. And we were able to catch up with him on a Zoom chat a couple of days ago to get a little bit more information on it all. What are you bringing to the tour this year? What
can folks expect? There are a lot of words you could use. It's multimedia, audio, visual, the whole thing. I'm playing solo guitar, which is not strictly true. I'm solo guitar. I play guitar. It's just me on stage, but some with backing tracks, some actual solo guitar pieces. I have a Brazilian section, all kinds of music, but they're all being played to photographic sequences that are on the screen, because you may or not know that I've got a sort of sub career as a photographer. I've photographed all over the world, and I've worked out this show, which is pretty interesting and exotic, where I do one whole thing on China, for instance, where I travel way out west and into Tibet, and I sequenced all this stuff because it's a lot of work over many years. I've done some sort of fantasy things where I play to, a track like Round Midnight, and I did all this New York photography to it. So it's really audio visual, mix of things. There's some Police stuff in there that hasn't been seen this way before. It ends with a big Police collage. And of course, there's a lot of chat from me, a lot of talk. So it's a sort of evening with a multimedia event. It's been going down extremely well so far.
Now, is this the show? You were about to start a tour and then COVID happened. And is this what that is?
Well, it is. It's really what it is a continuation. I was doing this. I think I got through about 11 shows. We actually ended up at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, sold that out. And then, you know what happened, and it happened to all of us. And so this is my return and picking up the thread of doing that. We did it as well as we could at that point. I would say since then, technological things have happened, improved, and we've actually been able to do a better job with the whole thing. In fact, we're working on it right now. I'm trying to get on stage with no guitar amplifiers, if that's possible. That's what we're looking at. It's pretty cool. And I just did 8 shows and they were all sold out. Very nice. Of course, doing those 8 shows, I would say, put that in, little pieces, bits and pieces. Because, someone like me, I rehearsed in my studio, we were projecting on the wall and I'm working out all the sounds and how to do it. But that's in the studio and it's just you and your guy. And then, of course, you get in front of an audience. And there's something about the presence of an audience that really changes the whole thing up. Not that it changes it all, but you go, it's another context. And so you sort of re-engineer what you're doing to, you know, being in theaters. So,
well, you know, I wondered about that, the dynamic of the audience, because to me, it's very interesting. You, who have played the biggest arenas in the world for decades, choosing some smaller venues like the North Shore Center. It's not a small club by any means, but it's more of like a theatrical theater that will give a sense of more intimacy, I think, with you and your stories and your photos. I'm guessing that must have been intentional.
Oh, it was absolutely intentional. I see it as a theatrical show. And when you see me on stage, I'm pretty good at the chat business. You know, I'm sort of born for the stage. It's no problem. So, yes, it was the right place to do it. And I, just from lifetime of music and, you know, the way things go, I thought the right way to do this would be to not be overly ambitious and try and sell out several thousand a night. You know, let me get used to it. And, you know, you have to bring the whole thing together, like the personnel I've got with me, how we travel, how much equipment have we got, how we, you know, it's a number, you know, and, you know, I do have people helping me. So there's me in my personal solo single performer position, knowing myself and how I, you know, building the confidence to engage with the audience. Well, you know, I'm playing very well, but I, you know, then there's I'm talking as well because people expect it. So I wanted to give it a chance to go through these sort of small to medium-sized theatres and, you know, just to get the whole thing together. And I, you know, last weekend I played in Houston and Dallas, beautiful theatres, and I thought that was the best we did. It was great audiences, you know, and it all went really well. And I felt, you know, it's strange because as the person standing in the space and you know, your brain goes to a certain place, I'm here, you know, I'm absolutely scared to death to do this. And then you do it. You just do it. You somehow I go into another space and I'm sort of getting used to that again. And, you know, you sort of find your way with it and, you know, you sort of lose fear. So the whole thing gets, you know, I mean, my hands are on the guitar and I'm playing all this stuff I know, you know, like licks and blah, 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 blah. You know, and I've got certain effects I use with echoes and things. And I sort of learn how to play the effects I'm using, how to work with them, how to get something out of it until you, it's every night it's improvised. I'm improvising to all these things. This is not a set thing. But within the improvisations, I find ways to kind of formalize what I'm doing. I go, oh, that's a really good bit that I'm doing there with this particular echo repeat. Just remember it. And so you start to build this new little repertoire in your head of how you're, you know, and in your hands of how you're going to play the show.
When you play the songs from The Police, your era of with The Police, what goes through your mind? I mean, is it like, oh, I have to do this. People expect it. I would rather not do this. I'd rather do my solo stuff. Does it bring back fond memories?
You know, yeah, that's a big, you know, muddy set of thinking. I don't want to do that. So I've sort of recontextualized The Police stuff, if you like, into the show that I'm doing. Yeah, instead of a singer, I'm playing the melodies, but I play them really well, you know, and I'm loose with it. So, you know, no one's going, oh, I don't want to hear it on a guitar. No, that doesn't happen. People are very accepting. They see I'm standing there and I'm, you know, doing the best I can.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
It sounds like a really cool reimagining of songs that we grew up with.
Yeah, that's a very good way to put it. You know, they accept there's the guy, he is the guitarist and he's playing these on the guitar. Oh, yeah, great. You don't want to ever lock it down like that's it. Because there's, you know, this was the way it was in the actual Police group. We go on stage every night and there'd be new passages that we just sort of made up every night. There was never like absolutely locked down. It's like we're all extremely good musicians and we know how to improvise, be in the moment, play with one another, react. And you know, it's just the same for me, you know, because I'm in a different venue every night with a different set of people. And so I try to be very present in that situation. You know, there's a there's so many nuances to it as a performer. You know, I have to feel good physically, you know, try not to be tired, try to be like really feeling good. So, you know, I'm into it and I can be in that moment. It's not for everyone. It's it is sort of akin to being an athlete. You get that little mini period of time and you better be on. You know.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder, I know that you guys did it once before, but I wonder if there's a chance that the Police might ever do a reunion, anything like that ever in the future again.
It would be shocking to me. I don't think so. After, you know, those calls I get every day from Stuart and Sting, I say, no, 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 don't call me.
Because you've been there, done that, and it sounds like you're having really a lot of fun.
I mean, if somebody really wanted to organize that, you know, at the cost of many millions of dollars, putting that together, sure, you know, I mean, because it was one of the great bands of all time, with more hits than anybody else ever. There's a lot of joy in it, you know. But I don't think it's going to ever come back together. I don't sit around wishing it at all.
Yeah, there is no love lost between the members of the Police, sadly. So we probably will never get a reunion like that again. But in the meantime, you can check out the legendary guitarist Andy Summers. He will be at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie. It's going to be September 8th, North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie. Tickets available at andysummers.com or if you go to the North Shore Center's website. There you go, our A-list interview for this week. Andy Summers, the guitarist for the Police, their hit song, Every Breath You Take. There are so many. You can catch him at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie. It's going to be September the 8th. And, yeah, it should be a great show. Sounds like he does a lot of chat with the audience. I've never actually seen him do his solo show. But it sounds like he tells lots of stories and lots of, you know, inside stuff. It's very interesting. He has absolutely no interest in going backwards and reuniting for any kind of Police reunion. I guess they tried it once, and it didn't work out for, I don't want to speculate why, but it didn't work out. And now I've spoken with Sting. I've interviewed Sting, and he had no interest in doing it. Andy Summers has no interest in doing it. So I don't know if it's personal or just, you know, it's been there, done that. I kind of get that and understand that, I suppose. Still to come on the program, we're going to get into our Food Time show. We're going to be talking barbecue today because we are not going to have a Food Time show next week. We get into our fall football preemption season next week. Although I think, don't we have baseball next week?
No, it's Northwestern football kicking off the season next week.
Northwestern football.
Yes.
So when do you and your little football buddies get together?
2 weeks from today.
Hamp and OB.
Yes.
Are you looking forward to it?
As a matter of fact, yes, because it's been a long summer without them. I've missed them.
Have you?
Yeah, it's a fun show to do because these guys are so genuine and they're really down-to-earth nice guys and fun to watch a game with. And it's also fun for me to listen to them talk about the game because obviously they know more about it, than most anybody
in the world.
I mean, firsthand experience, obviously, from both of those guys in different eras of football.
Right, right.
It's a lot of fun.
So you do the pregame with them first, right? Before
Correct.
The game starts,
right?
And then you actually go down the hall into our conference room,
right?
Where there are sides of beef. hanging
slabs in the meat locker.
Slabs in the meat locker. Yeah, you saw that scene in the movie Rocky.
Uh-huh.
That's what it's like.
That's
in our
exactly
conference
what
room.
It's like
as they watch the game. I haven't actually gone in to watch the game with them because I'm afraid they'll hurt me.
No.
But my office is just right down the hall, so I can hear them screaming and yelling.
There's a lot of that.
Yeah. And then they get all the testosterone worked up and bring it all into the studio, and Andy has to somehow corral all of that.
Right. I put my referee shirt on for the post game. And I have a whistle just in case there's any penalties.
Well, isn't the whistle just to call the police if it gets out of hand?
Well, that's true, too. I have a little setup on my phone, too, where I just push one button and, yeah.
It's like a 911.
They're all here, yeah. Within minutes.
So that starts 2 weeks from today.
2 weeks from today, yeah. We'll start the pregame and
Amp and OB.
Get ready to hopefully enjoy a decent Bear season this year. Because last year was nothing but disappointment all the way around.
What's your take on with preseason? Because we've had a few ups, but we've had a few more downs lately.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to say. Man, the biggest concern, I think, for the Bears coming out of the preseason right now is the health of the offensive line. They've had a couple of key starters go down to injuries. Not exactly sure how long they're going to be out, but it's a big day, a big week in the NFL because teams have to cut their rosters from the training camp roster of 90 players down to 53 by Tuesday. So there'll be a lot of big names out there. So in case the Bears need some help on the offensive line, I'm sure there are going to be some guys that were cut by other teams that, what do they say, that one man's trash is another man's treasure?
Right.
Yeah.
There will be no shortage of opinions, that's for sure.
No, that's the truth. And that's the thing I enjoy the most because Hamp and OB don't always agree.
Yeah. Yeah, it's complete honesty.
Yeah.
I do love that. And I'm sure there will be plenty of talk about Steve McMichael.
Yeah.
Now, pretty much a sure thing going into the Football Hall of Fame, right?
Yeah, it's about as close as you can get to being a sure thing without actually being official. He made the list of the finalists in the senior category, three finalists. All three finalists in the senior category went in this past year. And now they have a vote in January right around the Super Bowl. This committee of 50 members will get together, and you need to get 80% of that vote. And if you do, then you're in.
And it's pretty much a sure thing that Mongo will get it.
You know, it's looking that way. You know, you hate to
When do they do the vote? When is that going to happen?
It's the end of January.
Okay.
So, and I know from talking on the air with other hosts, we had his wife on with Lisa Dent the other day. And she said that all of this is really buoying his spirits.
Oh, good.
You know, and he's listening to everything and smiling, and it's great to hear.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. And I guess Jared Payton is going to be inducting him.
How about that? He's going to set
something. Once it happened.
He's going to set a record.
Yeah, Steve McMichael asked Jared to do this.
Yeah.
Obviously because of his closeness with Jarrett's dad,
right.
Walter Payton.
And Jarrett inducted Walter Payton into the Football Hall of Fame as a youngster, and now we'll have an opportunity to do it again, which is incredible.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
All right. You're going to have some sports coming up in a minute, right?
You got that right.
All right. Well, let's do this. May I share a text that is poured in?
Well, please do.
Mm-hmm. We love hearing from our listeners here each and every Sunday.
Best in the world.
The most part, yeah.
Okay. maybe there's this
few,
one is
there's a few rotten
a little
apples in the barrel, but no, I'm kidding. For the most part.
Okay.
For the most part, I'm kidding. But
what'd you say your name was again?
don't ask. Don't ask. I can't remember. We get lots of very interesting input, ideas. Helpful, you know, sometimes we're wondering about this or that, and, you know, listeners will remember something that we don't, but, you know, we get some nice comments every once in a while also, like the one that I just had up here, and that...
Jack, go in and show them how to use the screen there.
What do you call this World Wide Web thing that you kids seem to like so much? No, I had one open here a second ago. I'll just paraphrase. It was the 847 area code that said, "I'm sitting here in the Costco parking lot laughing my head off. I don't want to go in the store because I'm afraid I'm going to miss something."
Miss something. That's real. That is a compliment. Thank you very much. Thank you.
If you have to choose between us and
buying necessary
50
items
pounds of honey roasted peanuts. That's the choice that one makes. The Costco near my house just started where you can check out your own groceries.
Yes.
Oh, you mean a self-service?
Self-service.
Oh, before it was all
cashiers,
people,
yeah.
People, real people doing, helping you with it. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I like the self-serve. So then I don't have to talk to anybody.
Do you cover up your cart when you go in there?
I think we've established that years ago.
Yeah. So whether it's at your friendly neighborhood Jewel or Costco, you will still cover up the groceries. Because
when I'm buying 90 pounds of red meat, I don't want to be judged by, especially at Costco, because you're buying, you know, gigantic portions. You have to buy gigantic portions of everything there. So I really don't want to be judged there.
Okay.
So, yes. Boy, if I was sitting in the car listening to this, I would say, what a waste of time that was. We'll get into our food time show in just a couple of minutes. As we were chatting with Andy a few minutes ago, we would get into fall football preemption season starting next week. So we'll be, Shwani, I know this is going to break your heart that next week I'm only here until 10:30.
I know.
Do you miss me already?
I do.
It's a little dry in here, I guess.
Humidity. It's the California fires. It's the smoke from the California fires.
It's that dry heat that we had earlier in the week.
Andy experienced the burning winds.
Andy Taylor, our new sports anchor.
Our new sports tailor, Andy Porter.
Correct.
Everyone's going to be a Porter on the show from now on.
Dave Porter. Washington is where I experienced that.
Andy
last
was
weekend,
on vacation last week in the Pacific Northwest.
Yep.
And you said that you had a really hard time breathing.
Yeah, it was interesting. We flew into Spokane, I think, on last Friday, and then in the afternoon, and last Friday evening, they closed Spokane's airport because the wildfires were so close.
Oh, wow.
And you could just absolutely smell it everywhere you went. And I know that we had that bad air quality, about a month or so ago from the Canadian wildfires?
Yep.
This was magnified by about 5.
Wow.
And it was really bad. Yeah. I'm still feeling, you know, a little in my throat because of just all
like
the irritation.
A little irritation.
And we went to a wedding at Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and it's supposed to be beautiful. I say supposed to be because we could barely see anything through the haze.
Really? It was that thick. That's too bad because the Pacific Northwest is absolutely gorgeous. Shwani, you've been, right?
Many times.
Yeah, it's beautiful up there.
It might be, in my opinion, the most beautiful part of the United States.
It certainly is up there.
The Pacific Northwest.
Lots of green, lots of water.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. And you weren't able to enjoy it.
No. Even on a boat in the middle of the lake, Lake Coeur d'Alene, because we were taking a boat from this resort to where the event was. And all I could see was the water in front of us and a little thick haze over the trees, because it's a big forest area over there. But the one cool thing is, for all you golfers out there, this course has a green in the lake.
What?
It's a par 3. You need to take a water taxi from land where the tee box is to the green and back, because there's nothing else that connects the land to the green.
Well, that's pretty cool.
And it just floats out there, and it's the coolest. Everybody else is snapping pictures when we're on the boat of like the trees and the smoke, and I'm shooting pictures of the island green.
Yeah.
I'm loving that. I want to play that course very badly.
Wow, I've never heard of anything like that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
The only, Shwani, I think this is the same for you. The only golf courses that we play have windmills and clowns.
Clown's mouths, yeah.
Clown's mouths.
Bowling pins, yeah.
You shoot the ball into.
Yeah. A replica of the Eiffel Tower.
Right. Good call.
Exactly.
No, seriously, Andy, just yesterday we were talking about, I haven't played a real round of golf in probably 7 or 8 years. And
he keeps threatening
like
to take
out
me
again
out there, and he just never comes through on a date.
Well, do you want the Eiffel Tower golf course, or do you want the open clown mouth?
I want the fairways and greens.
You want fairways and
I would
greens.
Say count your blessings
on
that.
That's a good point.
I think that's the last time I played. It might be 10 or 15 years.
Really?
And I was invited into a foursome.
Okay.
And I said, I'm terrible at this. And I said, I'm just going to goof around the whole time. I'm out here to enjoy the nice weather, have a couple of beverages along the way. I'm not out here to take this seriously. Oh, no, come on, it'll be fun. It'll be great. By about the second or third hole, they asked me to leave.
It was that bad, huh?
I got kicked out of my foursome.
Holy, that's funny. See, I have to start practicing because the week
you're enjoying that a little too much.
He is enjoying it too much.
I wasn't concentrating. I wasn't paying attention.
I have to practice because the week of Thanksgiving, we're heading out to my wife's parents' place in Las Vegas. And my in-laws are tremendous golfers. Mm-mm. They golf every day. My mother-in-law wins tournaments out there. And they are so into it, they sold one of their cars and now have two golf carts and a car.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
About that.
So they're serious about it.
So you got to practice up.
Yeah. And I usually play with my father-in-law on Thanksgiving day in a scramble out there. So it's...
Do you want me to go along? So by comparison... You'll look like a genius next to me.
And then they'll ask you to leave.
Do you golf left-handed?
I do golf left-handed.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah. So that would be fun. We can really wreck things out there.
I'm left-handed, and I play right-handed.
Well, another layer of the onion is peeled.
Really? Is that true?
Yes, it is true. And I swing a baseball bat right-handed.
Interesting. I swing a baseball bat
left-handed. But I have to throw the baseball with my left hand. I cannot throw anything with my right hand.
And I'm the opposite. I bat left-handed and throw with my right hand.
I do everything lefty.
Yeah.
I'm lefty all the way.
There's your new name, lefty.
I bet that guy went into the Costco.
Oh, that guy. That guy drove his car into the wall.
Just through the window.
He's just like, I can't take this anymore. Award-winning Food Time. Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show, the original All Things Edible program here, talking about cooking, preparing, dining out. Cover it all, and we have for decades. Dig into some grilling info today. As we've been mentioning, we begin fall football preemption season next week, so that actually won't be a Food Time show next week. So I thought we'd get our grilling in a little bit early to get ready for the Labor Day weekend, the traditional end of the summer season, although I hope you're not going to stop grilling just because Labor Day comes along. Plus, as weird and as wacky and as devastating as the weather has been, horrible in some cases, but certainly very different than what you might call, you know, traditional summer in Chicago, I think we're still going to have plenty of hot weather ahead and plenty of grill time still ahead of us. I love being on the grill. I love being out there and trying new things. I love bringing some of these things to you on my weekly television cooking segment on WGN TV Morning News. We're going to be doing some outdoor grilling this coming Wednesday. I'll tell you more about that later on. But let me bring in Dustin Green, who's been on the show with us several times, the director of Weber Grill Academy, the head grill master. Dustin, good to have you back on the show. How are you doing there, my friend?
I'm doing great, Dean. Thanks for having me back.
Thank you for joining us. Are you must be excited about this 365 days a year, right? To, you know, of new grilling ideas and new things that you can do out on the grill, right?
Well, you know, we do grill 365. And like you mentioned, though, that the summer season is starting to kind of get a little wrapping it up. But you know what? There's nothing wrong with grilling in fall. We grill in the winter, the spring. It's just like, you know what? If you can get outside, there's nothing better to do than just try to get some fresh air and fire up that grill.
Yeah. Now, in terms of popularity, what kind of grill are the most popular right now? Are they the old-fashioned kettle grills on which you'd put charcoal? Are there, you know, the gas grills? I see these griddles everywhere these days. Everyone is either getting a new griddle grill or putting some kind of device on their old conventional grills that allows them to griddle.
You know, a little of both. You know, we always have the charcoal enthusiasts. We always have our gas enthusiasts. They love it. But, you know, you alluded to it with the griddles. And we have standalones and we have inserts and... People are just loving the versatility of these griddles these days. You know, the food that you're able to cook and the meals that you're able to really start serving your families, it just opens up such a vast variety of of different stuff, and you can still grill and do all that great stuff, but I mean, now we're talking about breakfast and fried rice and some blackened fish and all these different things that these griddles allow us to do.
Well, let's start off with griddles then, since that seems to be all the rage right now. What are the most popular things to do? I'm not sure that I'm 100% signing on to the griddle craze. I know a lot of people love it. I just feel like if I'm in a griddle, I could just as easily cook inside my house.
Well, you know, the great part about the griddle is it's, you know, with it being outside, it makes cleanup a little bit easier. But like you said, though, it's like foods that we know people love to do. It's like you take your breakfast, and there's nothing better than going out on a Saturday morning. You fire your griddle up and throw your bacon and your eggs, your pancakes, French toast, and you can just start your day outside. And it makes inside, you know, you don't make a mess. It's just, you know, the griddle's easy. You scrape it off. You wipe it down when you're done, and you wrap it up, and you go about your day.
I guess. I guess that makes a big difference, I suppose. Yeah, the cleanup factor is always, you know, if often ignored by a lot of chefs, but somebody's got to clean up that stuff.
Well, don't get me wrong. I love making bacon in the morning, but we all know it's, you put your little thing on your stovetop and the bacon pops, and next thing you know, you got grease all over your counters and all that. But, you know, outside, it stays on that griddle top, and like I said, you scrape it into the grease management system, you wipe it down, and it's ready to go for the next time. It's just easy.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right. You may have convinced me a little more. I'm inching a little closer to your way of thinking on this. Give me some really good griddle recipes. Let's start off with, you know, like a nice, for the Labor Day weekend, you're having some people over for dinner, you want to show off your new griddle. What are some things that you're going to do on there?
You know, if I'm looking for quick, easy, nice things to do, you can do like an Oklahoma smash burger. You know, you put some nice onions down on that griddle top, a little bit of oil, take a ball of ground beef, 3 to 4 ounces, and then you smash it. So you use your a spatula or a griddle press, and you just make this thing about 1/4 inch thick. And what it does is when it touches that griddle top, you just get this beautiful, even caramelization. They cook in about 2.5-3 minutes, tops quick. The onions are caramelized, and you put it between a bun with a little bit of, you know, whatever else you're looking to put for your fixings. And it's just a nice, easy, great-tasted, flavorful dish that's going to be done really quick.
Now, what's your feeling about other stuff that goes on burgers? We were talking about this earlier in the show. I'm not a fan of overdoing it with my burgers. I like to be able to taste the beef. This time of year, if I can get a slice of beefsteak tomato on there, I'm in heaven. Some nice crispy lettuce, I'm in heaven. But people start piling on other things on the burgers. That's where they lose me. Well, where do you stand on this? What do you like to put on a, like the smash burger that you just described? First of all, just one or two patties are you going to put on there?
I like two patties because, you know, with a 4-ounce ball, by the time it cooks down, you're at about 3 ounces of beef. So you put two of them on there, you got nice 6 ounces of meat. You can still fit it in your mouth when you're going to bite down on that burger. But I'm with you. Like, people start piling these toppings on there, and next thing you know, I need a fork and a knife to eat a burger. And to me, that's not what I want to do. I want to be able to pick this thing up. I want to be able to enjoy it. You know, sometimes they're messy, sometimes they're not. That's okay. But if I can't, like, take a nice bite out of it without having to smush it down, to me, that's too much stuff on there.
Yeah, what kind of cheese do you like to put? I like a nice cheeseburger. I like a nice sharp cheddar on there, just my own personal taste. But I mean, what's your favorite? But tell me what are Dustin Green's favorite toppings on a burger?
You know, for me, a simple lettuce. I believe it or not, I'm not a huge raw tomato person. I like tomato sauce when it's cooked, but I don't care for raw tomato.
Huh.
Mayonnaise. I do like ketchup. I'm a pepper jack cheese person. I like a little bit of heat, not too much, but
okay.
A little bit.
All right.
So, and then lettuce. I mean, I'm pretty simple. And we could go buck crazy, and we can put, like, you know, I do like bacon, but it's, you know, I'm with you. Like, let the beef do what it's supposed to do. Have a nice, flavorful burger.
Right.
You know, sometimes you just put too much stuff on there, and you lose things. It loses what you want to do with it.
Yeah, I know a lot of people like it, but my pet peeve is the fried egg on top of your burger. It's like, are you even going to be able to taste the beef that's in there with that on there anyway? I mean, I like a nice fried egg, but I just don't want it on my burger, and I'm going to have to try to like convince you about the raw tomatoes, especially this time of year. Dustin, right off the vine in my backyard, a nice tomato. Oh my gosh, it's so delicious.
I would try it. I wouldn't say I would. I'd definitely try it. But for me, tomato, too, when, even when I put them on burgers, and I'll serve them that way, but it's got to be the right thickness, right? Like, you put, like, a too thick of a piece of tomato on there, and once again, you're kind of drowning out that burger and the rest of what's there.
I agree. It has to be just the right proportions. All right, let me take a quick break, and we'll come back and get some more recipes. People have questions about all things Weber, equipment, recipes, or otherwise. Dustin's the guy to answer your question, the director of the Weber Grill Academy, the head grill master for Americas, 312-981-7200. It's 12:35, talking some grilling today on our Food Time show with Dustin Green, the director of the Weber Grill Academy, the head grill master, taking your calls, questions, 312-981-7200. Recipe ideas, recipe questions, equipment questions. Dustin's here to answer any and all for you. So I love doing pizza on the grill, Dustin. What? Walk me through your way of doing some great pizza on the grill.
You know, I try to keep it easy. You know, there really is, there's two ways we could put our raw pizza dough onto the grate, grill it on one side, take it off, top it, and then finish it. Or we could take, we have it's called the Crafted Outdoor Kitchen Collection, where we have a pizza stone, and we can put that into our Genesis gas grill, and or even our Spirit line, and literally let that stone heat up. We make our pizza, you put your sauce, your toppings on it, you put it in there, and you let the grill just convection heat cook and do what it's going to do. And, they're both super easy ways, and they're great ways to just kind of let people top them with however they want and keep it nice and simple.
So are you saying to take the dough, whether you make it yourself or you can buy dough that's just ready to be spread out now, and put it directly on the grills?
Correct. Yeah, so if you have gas or charcoal, electric, whatever grill you're using, you get it up to about 450 degrees, you stretch your dough, you give it a nice, even, you don't need a ton, but a little bit of oil on there to help it to release from that grill grate.
Mm-hmm.
About 2.5 minutes on that side, you take it off, and then you have that beautiful grill mark. You have that facing up, and that's just when you sauce it and top it with whatever you want and put it back on to finish. And it just gives it a little bit extra flavor, a little bit extra nice little crunch to it, and, you know, it's really awesome.
So you're saying that one side on the grill to get the grill marks, you take it off, and then are you flipping it over and putting the ingredients, your toppings, on the side that you just grilled, and now the raw side is on the bottom again?
Correct. Okay. And so it's kind of like you're par cooking that pizza dough, and then once you take it off, and you're literally looking at that grill mark that you just put on there, 2.5 to 3 minutes, and then finish it with your sauce and toppings and put that put it right back on the grill with that raw side on the bottom and let it just finish doing what it's going to do.
I assume that you're doing that in an indirect cooking method, right?
You can, on like a low to medium-ish heat, about 400 degrees, you can stay direct. If what we find is if you don't shred your own cheese, sometimes that cheese takes a little bit extra time to melt when you buy that pre-shredded stuff because there's a... They put an anticoagulant in it just to kind of so that the cheese doesn't stick together.
Yeah, try to grate it yourself if you can. It's much tastier, but melts much better also.
Yeah, and that's when I find that I got to bring an indirect element into it is if I use a cheese like that. But otherwise, if you like I said, about 400 degrees, and you let it do its thing with that lid closed, it comes out in about 8 to 10 minutes total cook time.
Okay, all right. I did some calzones on the grill, basically a pizza that I've, put the toppings and then folded over that I used a pizza stone on because I had, like 6 or 8 calzones on one stone, and they turned out fantastic. And it's nice, easy to grab one once they cool down, it's kind of like finger food almost.
That sounds incredible. I'm going to have to try that.
Yeah, it turned out pretty good. And I'm thinking on my TV segment this week, I like doing variations of pizzas. I'm thinking of doing like a French bread cut in half, and then almost like a pizza bread, where I'm going to put the sauce on, toppings, whatever, put it in some foil, and then on the grill. So everything will kind of cook inside the foil packet, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound feasible to you?
It does. I think it depends on what you're going to put in there to, you know, are you going to keep your bread together as like a whole when you slice it, or are you going to leave it open and then put your stuff on it?
Open, yeah, open and then put the stuff on it. Open, like an open face sandwich.
Yeah, I think it definitely would work. My one thought would be maybe try to, you could even like grill like the open side of the bread and then top it with your stuff and throw it in that wrap. It might give it a little extra crunch to it.
Nice, nice. So split the bread in half, get the grill marks on the cut side, and then and then do the topping and the foil and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, it might help with the, actually, I think it'd be a really fun, cool texture to add a little bit of crunch to it and even flavor maybe.
Good. Yeah, that's a fantastic idea. Here's the 309 area code. We made grilled pizzas last night for my daughter's 24th birthday. Everyone raved. We did it on indirect heat on a green egg. Now, that's an intense heat on the green egg, isn't it?
You know, it depends on how they had it set up, but it could have been. And it depending on the pizza, though, too. I know you like to make a lot of pizzas, and, you know, if you're doing, like, a Neapolitan style or, like, the thinner crust pizzas, you really want a high heat anyways to begin with because that crust is going to cook so quick and the toppings, the cheese are going to melt. So I can see it working really nice.
Yeah. Ellen, you're on WGN with Dustin Green from Weber. Hi.
Hey, Dustin. How are you?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I was wondering, which vegetables are best to cook on a grill?
You know,
hello.
Honestly, yes, I'm here. Honestly, all of them.
Okay.
Is there anything specific that you're looking for? I mean, because like we grill zucchini and squash, asparagus, tomatoes, cauliflower, broccoli, green beans, Brussels sprouts. Okay, I mean, honestly, depending on the cut size, you can grill them right on the grates. Or you can get use a vegetable basket, which is ultimately a grill pan that you put on there and preheat, and then you can grill your vegetables right in that pan. So, really, honestly, you can grill everything.
Do you have Do you have something that's your favorite, Ellen, or something?
Well, what I was wondering, could I also wrap it in foil instead of buying one of those grills? Because I don't have a Weber grill. I can't afford one of those. But is foil a good way to wrap up the vegetables?
It is, and foil does a nice job. It just depends if you're trying to, you know, what foil does a little bit, it steams a little bit sometimes. So if you're looking to get a little crunchiness to your vegetables, you might have a little hard time getting that, but it will work and it will cook them.
Okay. Okay, great. Okay, thank you very much.
You know what you could do, Ellen, and Dustin, correct me if you think I'm wrong about this, but what I might try is I might take a couple of layers of the heavy-duty aluminum foil. You know, so you have a little thickness. Poke a few holes in it, and then put your vegetables. Let's say Brussels sprouts. I love my Brussels sprouts on the grill. I would put the Brussels sprouts in there with some olive oil, and by putting those holes in the foil, it won't steam anymore. It'll actually grill up a little bit, and I might even leave the top open. I might not enclose it like a packet. Does that make any sense, or am I just talking crazy here, Dustin?
No, I think it would work because you're right. If you let that steam kind of escape, it's going to, you know, cycle the air through it and give you that convection heat. It should work nice.
I think it's like a poor man's grill basket that
that
Dustin was talking about. And you know what? This time of year also, by the way, at the end of the year, a lot of the stores have these aluminum grill sheets. I've bought them at Jewel. They're like a dollar. And I like using them because, and I do asparagus on there. I do my Brussels sprouts on there, zucchini, things like that. I use them just because stuff doesn't fall in the grill, but also for cleanup. Oh, you can't beat these aluminum things. You just let it cool off and throw it away.
Yeah, what about cooking corn on the cob with the husk on? Can you do that?
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm sorry to jump in there.
Yeah, go ahead, Dustin.
I like to call it my lazy man's corn because if you get the nice fresh stuff, you want to, you know, that nice green color, make sure that it's got some moisture on it when you pick it up at the store. I literally throw it on at about 450 degrees direct heat, and it takes about 20 minutes to start to really have some nice color to it, and it comes out perfect. You know, just as long as you start with a nice fresh sweet corn, it's great.
Do you soak it in water or anything first, Dustin?
I honestly, no, Dean, I don't. I just look for a nice, fresh stuff, and I just take it right into the husk. I put it on there, and it comes out great.
Oh, Ellen, I'm telling you what.
Wow.
There is no greater joy in the world than corn that you have roasted on the grill, because all the sugars in the corn caramelize. It's fantastic. It's fantastic.
Then you can put a big glob of butter on it after it's done.
If you twisted my arm, I suppose I would have to put a big glob of butter.
There you go. There you go. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the great questions.
Nice talking to you both.
Thanks, Ellen. You too. I appreciate the good calls. Let me see here. 630 area code. Could I get some tips on grilling fish? Done right, it's delicious, but fish for me is sometimes unforgiving. What do you say to that, Dustin?
You know, fish, you're right, though. Fish is a touchy thing, and if it's grilled too long, it tends to dry out. You undercook it. People are turned off a little bit by it. But, depending on the fish, and, you know, I oil and salt and pepper all of them. You know, sometimes it's skin on, sometimes skin off. I always go flesh side down, like the meat side, down onto the grill first. Depending on how thick it is, I'll grill it for direct heat for, you know, 5-6 minutes, get a nice mark, turn it over. I personally, and I know everybody's got a different doneness they like with their fish, you know, for like salmon, I like to pull salmon about 135-ish. You know, some people might think that's a little low. Carryover for me brings it up a little bit. But I like it to have, it's cooked through, but it still has a little bit of hue of, like, that it's not dried out.
Yeah, yeah. I get that. I'm going to try that because I've heard that from so many people. Putting the flesh side down first to get the grill marks and then flipping it over, because I usually do skin side down and basically let it bake on my grill. And then I take it right off of, I get a spatula and go between the flesh and the skin and take it off that way. But now I don't have any grill marks on it. I think it would be a little more visually pleasing if I had those grill marks. But you got to oil it because some of the fish also is a little more delicate and might fall apart.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. And I've made the mistake over the years, too. It's one of those things you learn from after you do it once or twice, you know, and you don't put enough oil on there. Even when you think you got enough oil, and it doesn't need to be sopping and sitting in it, just a nice coat that it's going to release from the grill. But, you know, the other part, too, If you don't preheat your grill long enough and your grates aren't hot enough to create that separation, you're really starting off in a bad place anyway.
Right, right. Now, do you oil the grill itself? I do. I clean the grill and then I take some paper towel with oil on it, and I also oil the grill, the grates, and then the meat, so nothing sticks.
Yeah, and if it works, it's awesome. I tend to find sometimes, and it depends on what temperature you heat your grill to. I just don't want that oil to burn off the grate. And as long as you're oiling your food too to make sure that you have a good barrier, you're good. You know, that's the biggest thing. We want that oil to help create caramelization and create separation.
Okay. Once again, I'm taking it one step too far. 608 area code. Do you have any ideas for grilling squash or pumpkin for the fall?
Wow. You know, those are great questions. And I like to take either one of them. You know, it depends if you got the pumpkin or you have a squash, depending on the size. For me, I like to break them down to a little bit smaller pieces. You scoop the seeds out, hit them with a little bit of butter, and then bake them, but not bake them, but put them on the grill so that they start to really, you know, get soft and get nice. But by opening them up and exposing more of that meat flesh of the pumpkin or squash to it, we're able to just get more flavor on it. The more caramelization, the more color, the more we can get those sugars to start to brown, the better, the sweeter those things are going to be. And they're pretty darn sweet anyways as we get into the fall and it's in season.
Right, right. I saw Steve Raikland, you know, on Channel 11 on my Saturday of cooking shows. He was doing some butternut squash on the grill. Cut it in half. As you say, scoop the seeds out. Coated the inside with some olive oil and some butter. And let it cook. I think he had it like, I want to say it was like 400 degrees indirect on the grill. And, these butternut squash, they came out nice and brown and golden, caramelized, from being in the grill, nice and soft. He let it cool, scooped out the inside, and it looked absolutely delicious.
Steven does a great job. I would do the exact same thing that he did. His temperature, he's spot on. I would replicate that.
Yeah, it looked super delicious. Let me take a break and we'll get to some more questions. Dustin Green, the Grill Academy headmaster, with us today, 312-981-7200. 12:53, Dean Richards on our Food Time segment on WGN. We're going to be doing some grilling on my television cooking segment this coming Wednesday morning at about 9:35. Dustin, we've got somebody with a question from the 630 area code. What percentage of fat should I have in a good smash burger?
Yeah, that's a great question. Personally, I'm an 80-20 person. I think it's just a perfect blend of that lean to the fat. It cooks so nice. It keeps you nice and juicy for that burger. And, the 80-20 is just nice.
Yeah, you want some of the fat in there. Fat is flavor, right? I mean, that's where the flavor lives.
Exactly. No, we preach that, honestly. Fat's flavor. As long as you keep it, you cook it at that right temperature. You're doing smash burgers on the griddle. I like to do high heat. It's perfect. They get a nice, beautiful caramelization. That fat renders down, keeps that burger nice and moist. You flip it. Simple.
So, 224 area code asked, does Weber make a griddle insert for the Weber Traveler that I won on WGN? That's that little portable grill, isn't it, the Traveler?
It is. It has two wheels. It folds up real nice. It has some hydraulic legs. And, for the grate system on that grill, it has two porcelain enamel-coated cast iron grates that fit in there. And we do have an insert for a griddle that fits in, and it's a half size for that grill. And, it turns that thing into a griddle as well, and it just, that grill's unstoppable. We talk about tailgating coming up starting next week. That grill is just a perfect, type that you could use for that.
Yeah, I have one of those at home that I use for tailgating when we've done my TV cooking segment from remote locations. I've taken that Traveler, folded it up, put it in the back of my car, and it's so easy to move around. It's a good one, and if there's a grill insert for it, even greater, but. Like a griddle that you can buy in the store probably would sit right on top of the grates also, right?
It could, yes. We even have an insert for our crafted collection. It's a, like a plancha circular insert. You can set that right on the grates too, and it's got a nice one-inch lip on it. It helps keep the, when you're cooking and tearing your food in there, it does a nice job of keeping everything together.
Yeah, the insert probably, the actual insert is probably better because then you can get the grease off of there. It's not going to build up. It'll go right into the drip area where it's supposed to go, I think, right?
No, 100% correct.
Yeah, that makes a big difference when you're doing some griddling out there. Somebody asked, you're talking about doing vegetables on the grill. How do you season your veggies? What do you do to them? I just put olive oil and maybe a little salt and pepper on them, but I don't overdo it with vegetables myself.
I'm the same. I just love oil, salt, and pepper and everything. It lets the natural flavors of all the food just kind of do what they're going to do. And if I'm going to introduce a flavor to something, it's typically a marinade or it's a sauce that I'll put on to finish it with. And I just want it to be I don't know. I just love the naturals of just that oil, salt, and pepper, what it does for food.
Yeah, same here. Same here. Maybe one exception when I do my Brussels sprouts on the grill. I start off with just olive oil and some salt and pepper, and grill them nice and slow because those can char up on you pretty fast. So I do them nice and slow. But when they're done, I'll put a sprinkle of balsamic vinegar or a balsamic glaze on top of it, and adds a little sweetness to the whole thing. I've had them where people also take some bacon, chop it up, and put that in with the Brussels sprouts. I'm not a big fan of putting bacon in stuff, but I got to say, the time that I had it, it was pretty tasty. So there's a couple of ideas. People want to get more info, Dustin, what's the best way to do that?
You know, everything you can find for us is at Weber.com. We have everything from recipes to information on products and, you know, some YouTube links on some how-to videos and really anything you're looking to do from a cooking standpoint, grilling, Weber-based, you know, Weber.com.
Good deal. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day today. See-